Hi, I'm Bob Vila. Protect yourself from tetanus in your garden and diphtheria, another possibly fatal infection. Get your vaccination every 10 years. If it's been 10, do it again. To learn more, visit www.nfid.org.
News Talk 620 WWNR. Keeping you informed with Southern West Virginia's most accurate and dependable forecast.
Here is your forecast from the Weather Channel. Another front moving in for tonight, so a 1 in 2 chance of light snow showers and flurries expected. Low around 30 early Friday. We'll climb out of that into the low and mid-30s, so kind of a raw afternoon with a 6 in 10 likelihood that the snow showers will persist throughout the day. Tomorrow night, 1 to 2 additional inches, and we'll hold in a slight chance of snow showers on Saturday. Pretty raw again with a high only in the mid-20s, and look for increased sun by the end of the weekend. High Sunday, around 32.
Knowledge is power. News Talk 620 WWNR.
The opinions expressed during this program are not necessarily those of the staff, management, or advertisers of News Talk 620 WWNR.
Tonight, Head On with Bob Kincaid. Head On is brought to you every night by the 20,000 members of the Affiliated Construction Trades Foundation. If you're working in West Virginia, they're working for you. Now, Bob Kincaid.
Hey, good evening. Almost 7 minutes after 7 o'clock this Thursday night. I'm Bob Kincaid. This is Head On, and I would be remiss if I did not open this show with back up, everybody. Let's go, Mountaineers! There, I'm all better now. How about those ears? First time in WVU history that we've made it past the second round of the Big East tournament. And I guess the Big Mountains tomorrow. That's okay. We can climb mountains. We took down... We did mountaintop removal on just blasted Boston College today. The only time I've seen it that it was actually good, just destroyed Boston College. What, up by 25 points or so at one point? Tomorrow, though, Villanova, who during the regular season beat us like we owed them money, but what a sweet and fitting. Farewell it was for Boston College as they head off into the sunset of the ACC, where they will never, ever again see an NCAA tournament bid. No, because those belong to, like, Wake Forest and Maryland and Duke and UNC. We're not going to be hearing much from good old Boston College. So, bye-bye. Bye-bye. That was a sweet win today, though. I'm just as proud of it, and I heard a great new phrase. Kind of made me feel good watching the game when Kevin Pitznagel out on the far corner at the 3-point line just dropped one straight through, and I forget if it was Sean McDonough or one of the other two guys said, "Well, there goes another West Virginia layup." The kid's been on fire for the last 2 days. Let's hope he's got some fuel for tomorrow too. Villanova, woof. Let's see. We can go pretty much anywhere you want to go tonight. That'll be fine by me. But for the most part, well, some fun stuff going on in-state, some fun stuff going on outside the state. Fun, I use that term loosely. Some of this stuff there's absolutely nothing funny about. But headline, state pharmacists say many jobs go unfilled. Insurance lobbyists cite pharmaceutical insurance crisis. Random survey of nearly 550 pharmacists in West Virginia has found that many pharmacies are understaffed because of a shortage of pharmacists. I give you 3 days before the insurance industry comes out and says, well, that's because West Virginia allows people that have been poisoned to sue pharmacists. There is a pharmacist crisis in West Virginia. The pharmacists are leaving. You know, these guys... When are we going to figure out that if an insurance executive says it or if an insurance lobbyist says it, it's a lie? We could go to the trouble of hooking them up to polygraph machines, I suppose. But why bother? If they're talking, they're lying. That's why it's insurance. There is no good neighbor. You're not in good hands. They don't like you. They don't care about you. They want your money as long as you don't want any money from them. I spent the better part of the early afternoon just making some calls around to some various and sundry senators, urging them to please speak up for working West Virginia families with this third-party bad faith law and not to take away our constitutional rights that were fought and bled and died for. But please, please, send this god-awful third-party bad faith bill off in some little corner somewhere to die a slow, painful death. This thing is just awful. And with the passage of the bankruptcy bill today, yes, they did, the Senate, by a vote of 74 to 25, there's a lot more in that 74 than there are Republicans in the Senate. Go along, get along, go along, get along. Raw hide. No hide, no guts. No Democrats, where at least some of these people are concerned. I don't know what they might. They might call themselves Democrats, but if you voted on this bankruptcy bill, not much of one. If you voted for it, and I'm confident that our senators did the right thing. It's people like presidential hopeful Joe Biden that I don't. I'm sure he didn't do the right thing. I doubt if Joe Mentum Lieberman did the right thing. I could be wrong. Jeff Bingaman, a guy who calls himself a Democrat from New Mexico, probably did the wrong thing. I don't have the vote tally in front of me. Somebody else can go get it. Let's go to the phones real quick. We have with us Scarlet, or the Scarlet Pimpernel. Good evening.
Good evening there.
How are you?
Oh, I'm doing just fine. Sorry to come in on the heels of such illustrious folks as Biden, Lieberman, and the bankruptcy bill.
Oh, isn't that just enough to make you eat dirt and run rabbits?
Well, I'm afraid speed the decline is going to become our watchwords. It's the only way to get things done.
In many ways, yeah, I think you're right. We've got to find people that are going to stand up with us.
Here's what I do.
Okay.
And it's something just about anyone can do. And when I feel like I've got something to say and I want a lot of people to hear it, I paint it in letters at least 7 or 8 inches tall on cardboard, and I place it on the freeways. I use fencing, chain link fencing, and I put the cardboard against it on the inside so it can't go into traffic.
Right.
Then I just slip a bungee cord behind it. It takes literally 2 seconds.
I had wondered.
Had signs that have stayed up for months.
That's one. And you've been operating mainly in California, right?
California and Arizona.
Okay. Do you mind if I go ahead and give away your nom de guerre?
You go right ahead.
Who we are talking with right now is a gentleman who commonly goes by the term the Freeway Blogger. You can go to his site at freewayblogger.com. And you can see his work, and it's stunning work. I'm particularly fond of Chim Peach.
Well, Chim Peach was a serendipitous thing, because what I was doing was painting impeach signs over and over again, and two of them fell together to form that word.
Mm.
And I looked at it, and I thought, oh, my God, that is funny.
Yeah, that's just perfect, considering the Bush monkey in the White House.
But I was thinking, you know, the level of discourse is low enough. I don't need to bring it any lower. But then I think I listened to Sean Hannity for a couple of minutes. I thought, what the hell?
Yeah,
this is going up.
All done at this point. And I have to congratulate you. You've also got a link on your site called Fun with Hate Radio.
Yes.
And I read the transcript of your conversation with Michael Savage. And then I hollered for my wife and said, "Oh, honey, you got to see this." It was beautiful. That and your conversation explaining to the pro-war priest what happens to someone with the concussive force of a bomb.
Oh yeah.
So you know you're pretty well versed not only in visual arts but in the more arcane arts of dealing with right-wing talk radio too, right?
Well. You know, I always knew about hate radio, or Radio Rwanda is what I call it. But it wasn't until after September 11th that I actually started listening to it. And once I realized what kind of poison was going out across the country, I just knew that I had to do something. And I began by calling into these shows, just, you know, dialing in over and over and over again. You know, at a certain point, it occurred to me that really, if you want to reach a whole lot of people for almost no money, cardboard and paint on the freeways.
About how much does any given sign cost you?
Oh, anywhere between 5 and 11 cents.
Cents?
Yeah, sure. Cardboard is free, you know?
Yeah.
And just slap a coat of cheap white latex on it, and then I letter it using an overhead projector and tracing the letters. But I don't want people thinking, once I get one of those overhead projectors, by gosh, then I'll start.
No.
All you got to do is paint your message on the sign, stick it up somewhere. Generally, the watchword is put it in a place that's easy to see and hard to reach.
Mm-hmm.
And then the fun begins. And you just see how long it stays up.
That's do you invite any people who... who do it on their own, do you invite them to submit their work so that you can display it on your site?
Yes, certainly. And from all parts of the political spectrum, too. Now, so far, we haven't gotten any right-wing sign hangers yet. And, you know, it's a free country. It's free speech. It's what makes this country great.
Absolutely.
And so I welcome it from... You know, any and all sides, so long as, of course, as it doesn't include obscenities.
Right. And,
or blasphemy.
Yeah, there's been, or blasphemy. there has been, although, you know, you could argue that the whole war is a blasphemy. When did you put your first one up?
The first one came up after the 2000 election, when
okay.
I found out they weren't going to count the votes, because I had been taught that democracy was a place where you counted the votes. And so I just put up a sign that said 1776 through 2000, R.I.P.
True.
And to my surprise, it stayed up for hours.
Well, there's just some brilliant work on your site. I forget exactly what the line was. If we pursued Osama as hard as we did Clinton, Osama would be dead by now.
Yeah, if we'd gone after Bin Laden the way we did Bill Clinton, he'd be dead by now. And frankly, we'd be a much better country if Republicans hated Osama bin Laden the way they did Bill Clinton.
Exactly.
No, he would be dead by now.
Well, I have no doubt of it. As far as the military is concerned, I saw a great one, I guess, on the back of a vehicle that just said Tony Orlando and Dawn.
Yeah, for the yellow ribbon.
Right.
I thought, you know, appropriate... what do you call it? The attention should be paid to the, you know, who came up with those yellow ribbons.
Well, exactly. And you know, it's I'm getting to the point where these yellow ribbon magnets on the back of great big gas guzzling SUVs are really pretty offensive.
They're
manufactured in China.
Yes.
Someone is getting $4.95 to $6.95 a pop for these things. It goes in no wise towards supporting the troops, except for providing some sort of I don't know. I think it's almost like some sort of moral write-off. Well, I got my magnet. I'm done now.
Yeah, I don't want to send my son over there, but I can afford magnet space on my car. I
right,
suppose.
Exactly. You've got expertise in this. What would you say is the largest manageable size when you're hanging one of these?
Well, the problem with most sign hangers is that they go for bed sheets.
Right.
Bed sheets are ridiculous. You can't read them. You can hardly work with them at all. I use cardboard because it holds its shape. And if you duct tape coat hangers to the top, wire coat hangers will hold the weight of it, and then bungee cords either across the front or the back will hold it in place and make it perfectly secure. I've been able to put up 100 square feet, 120 square foot signs in 40 seconds, 30 or 40 seconds.
We should advise people, in some places this is deemed less than legal?
Well, here's what it does, is it breaks a couple of small rules, but it does it in defense of a much larger rule.
I tend to agree.
And I've been fairly assured by my legal counsel, whom I was smart enough to hire in advance.
That's always a good start.
You know, it's free speech. And so long as it's on the inside of the fencing and poses no safety hazard, then it's just fine. The official line is that such signs represent a visual distraction, which is true because that's what signs are. If a sign wasn't a visual distraction, it wouldn't be a sign, now would it?
Yeah, well, no, it wouldn't. And you know, it rises to the level of which is more important, a visual distraction that says, loving it.
Yeah.
Or something that points up the fact, you know, Bush lied.
Yeah, well, it's my free political speech, which is what makes this country and not North Korea. And once they take down every corporate logo, every billboard, and every Jumbotron screen
right
from beside the freeway, then I will take down my signs, and happily.
How do
but
they...
until then, you can call it a visual distraction, but I ain't buying it.
Exactly. Well, how do they hold up in the weather?
Just great. I'm telling you, cheap latex paint is a marvel, and cardboard is a miraculous canvas to work with. I have had signs that stayed up literally for months, and absolutely as readable on day 50 as they were on day one.
And do you? You said you start with a coat of latex white. Is that the general? Is an exterior paint, is that what you use? I mean, you don't want these things running in the rain.
Yeah, I use the stuff I can find. It's an absolutely disposable art and art form.
You know, when
I started doing this, I used heavy materials. I would chain them to infrastructure and say, you know, here, this is going to stop them. But you know what? If somebody wants to take your sign down, they're going to do it.
Well, sure.
No matter what you use. So once I made the switch to just lightweight materials like cardboard and start mass producing the signs, then it doesn't matter how many times they take them down. I'll just put them up someplace else.
Yeah, and I can well imagine that this could be something that people could, you know, enjoy as a group.
Yeah, oh, certainly.
You know, a freeway blogging party. Get together, paint these signs, plot where they're going to go up.
Yeah, well, you know, too many times we think, well, you put them on overpasses. Mm-hmm. Overpasses are good, but they don't last very long. Anything you can see while you're driving is a place you can put a sign, and everyone will see it. Because, hey, there's a sign there, you know, when
right.
there wasn't yesterday.
Well,
so that includes fencing along the sides of the freeway, trees, just anything you can see. And the more difficult it is to reach, and since freeways are very much locked in courseways,
right.
you can put something 100 feet away that it'll take 20 miles of driving to reach. You know?
You're so
right.
And once
you put yourself in that mindset, looking for those spots, oh, my God, it's fun.
Well, are you getting a lot of positive feedback around the country?
I'm getting all kinds of positive feedback, and I figure if one in every 1,000 people who looks at the site actually goes ahead and picks up the paintbrush and gives it a try, then we will have established a truly alternative medium, you know, a real
yeah.
a people's outdoor advertising company, if you will.
Now, of course, when you do these things, you absolutely have to operate on the KISS principle, right? Keep it simple.
Oh, for the material?
Well, I mean for the content.
Oh yeah. Well, you know, the things that provide the duration are size, placement, and content. The bigger a sign is, the quicker it's going to come down, no matter what it says. Although I put up some huge, like, peace on earth signs that stayed up forever because it was Christmas, you know.
Mm-hmm.
The more innocuous your content, the longer it'll stay up. The smaller the sign, so long as it's large enough just to get the message across. And for the messages I stick to are, you know, the war is a lie, Osama bin forgotten.
That's
and,
a beautiful one.
Osama who?
Yeah.
I've been putting up Osama who now for the last 2 years, but...
Well, that and I destroyed your trade towers, and all I got was away with it.
Yeah. I'm telling you, the most amazing thing to occur during my lifetime was the national transference of blame from the guy who did it to the guy who didn't do it. And I hope I don't live to see something as spectacularly embarrassing as that.
Again.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, and there's every chance in the world that we're going to do it, because I've got a story in my stack today to the effect that apparently our government is coming out and saying that Al-Qaeda, they don't even think that they're capable of mounting a large-scale attack, and yet at the same time, another report coming out that says our evidence of even thinking about nuclear weapons in Iran is speculative at best. And I don't know if you caught it yesterday, but there was a speech from George Bush that was so incendiary that it rattled the oil market.
And the oil market doesn't need more rattling.
I mean, you know, it's like an elephant with a mouse, for heaven's sakes. But I mean, we're seeing it again. And the question is whether the American mind can recognize the same shell game from a couple of years ago. You know, we're coming up on the second anniversary here.
Well, let me tell you, it's kind of sad to think about, but the right wing's manifesto is one that has been historically a very popular one, and it goes like this: we are better than everybody else, our God is better than everybody else, we are inherently better than everybody else, and anyone who disagrees with us is somewhat evil. Now, unfortunately, that is a very, very popular political stance. And for some of us, you know, we fight back just because it's the only way we can live with ourselves. But things are going to get worse before they get better.
I fear you're right. But, you know, there's a certain element of what you do that reminds me of Pastor Martin Niemöller's words. You know, when they came for the communists, I said nothing. When they came for the Jews, I said nothing. When they came for the trade unionists, I said nothing. When they came for me, no one said anything because everyone was already gone.
Yeah.
So to a certain extent, I think you're manifesting what he was advocating, and that is there can be sin in silence, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, certainly. And we've had enough, you know, bits of recent history, you know, to let us know that... No, it's better to start speaking out in before things get really, really bad.
Well, I think you're right. It's a question of degree, though, isn't it? You know, what constitutes really, really?
Yeah. Well, I think once we've the whole business where we're kind of with a nod and a wink becoming a torture state, I think that's certainly an indication that things are on the down slide.
I know, and it's one of those got to laugh to keep from crying kind of things.
Yeah, well, certainly that. You know, that's something. So long as you show a bit of wit and humor in your message, people will listen to it, even if they disagree with it the most violently.
Well, I certainly appreciate you calling in, and I hope maybe we've inspired a couple of freeway bloggers to go out there and start the movement in West Virginia. And I absolutely wish you the best as you continue onward. You do show good wit. And real humor. I mean, how can you the not at least grin a little bit at the idea of been forgotten? And it sticks with you. And I hope nothing interferes with your ability to keep speaking your truth.
I'm with you on that one.
All right.
The website again is freewayblogger.com, and just about anybody can do it.
All right. Thanks so much for your work and for your inspiration.
Thanks a lot.
Take care. The Freeway Blogger. Or, as he identified himself to John Kepi when he called in, Scarlet. Scarlet P. You get the reference? The Scarlet Pimpernel. Doing good. And yet, taking no personal credit for it. Go have a look at his website. Freewayblogger.com. Did you go, John? This is some good stuff, isn't it? And read the accounts of Fun with Hate Radio. It's a real giggle. But thanks so much to the Freeway Blogger for calling in. And like I said, I can't. What a great way to spend a Friday night, perhaps, making these signs. and just quietly hang them up around. And you know, nobody's going to get harmed. That's the key. That, you know, you got to put them up in such a way that they cannot impede the flow of traffic or do any danger to anyone. But once you've taken care of that, you're engaged in some seriously free speech. So thanks again. We've got to take our bottom of the hour break. If you want to call in on this topic or just about any other, you know, I come in here every night armed for bear. The number is 252-6200. Outside Beckley, it's 800-620-9967. This is Head On. I'm Bob Kincaid.
Good evening, this is Carl Mack, WWNR News. The Rodell police officer charged with domestic battery and brandishing a weapon yesterday is still on the job, despite earlier statements made by the town's mayor. Josephine Cox had said that Daniel Ray Price had been fired from the force after his arrest by Beckley police on Tuesday, but now the mayor says she cannot dismiss Price until his case goes to court. She says if he's found guilty, Price will then be discharged. Until then, Price is on administrative leave without pay. Police say the charges stem from complaints made against Price last month that involved the mother of his child, including one incident that occurred at Raleigh General Hospital while Price was in uniform. A part-time math teacher at West Virginia University Parkersburg branch has been charged with two counts of murder in the deaths of a couple whose charred remains were pulled from a burned apartment building last month. Parkersburg Police Chief Bob Newell describes 33-year-old Drew Spencer from Parkersburg as a neighbor and acquaintance of the two victims, but declined to say what led investigators to the suspect. The causes of death for 31-year-old John Nestor III and his girlfriend, 31-year-old Tracy Thompson, have not yet been released. Neither has the cause of the fire, although Neville says he thinks Spencer set the fire. The Senate has unanimously passed a bill that would require humane officers and law enforcement officials to exchange notes on possible signs of domestic violence and animal cruelty. The bill passed yesterday would further require humane officers to relay evidence of a child abuse and neglect found while responding to animal cruelty calls. Senator John Yoder, a Republican representing Jefferson County, says studies show a distinct correlation between animal cruelty and violence toward humans. That's the news. Now here's the forecast. Watch out for more snow beginning tonight. This evening, increasing cloudiness, chance of some snow showers. More likely chance, though, late tonight, with not much accumulation expected, and not as cold tonight either, low near 30. But then for Friday, snow showers in the morning. That becomes snow and rain mixed by afternoon. Snow could accumulate 1 inch, with tomorrow's high in the upper 30s. For News Talk 620, this is Carl Mack, when you need to know.
You've heard it all before. Lose weight while you sleep, erase your debts instantly, or make a fortune in your spare time. How about this one? Slash construction wages and 4 schools can be built for the price of 3. Ridiculous? Of course. Study after study proves that wage cuts won't reduce school construction costs. In fact, wage cuts hurt local companies and damage our communities. So don't believe everything you hear until you've heard the fact. A message from the ACT Foundation.
How tough are you? West Virginia Sports Promotions presents the 26th Annual Southern West Virginia Budweiser Original Tough Man Contest, as seen on TV. This exciting event is being co-sponsored by 84 Lumber, Hometown Subaru, and Charter Media. It's coming April 1st and 2nd to Beckley's Raleigh County Armory. Up to $5,000 in prize money and Tough Man jackets to be awarded, plus an opportunity to advance to the World Championships and fight on national TV. No entry fee. Divisions for men and women. To sign up, you must be 18 or older, an area resident, no pro fights, and limited amateur experience. Just tough local guys and gals. If you think you're tough enough, call 1-800-296-3897. That's 1-800-296-3897. It's the 26th Annual Southern West Virginia Budweiser Original Tough Man Contest, as seen on TV. Coming April 1st and 2nd to Beckley's Raleigh County Armory. Tickets go on sale March 12th. Tough men, tough women, and ring girls, sign up now. Wimps need not apply.
There are three things you get at LNS Toyota. Great prices. Big selection, no hassles. Now here's the specials of the week. LNS Toyota has brand new 2005 Corollas, over 35 to choose for as low as $13,818, including a $500 factory rebate. Buy a brand new 2005 Camry, over 25 to choose for as low as $17,585, including a $750 factory rebate. Plus, buy Toyota certified pre-owned vehicles with 3.99 APR financing for 48 months, a 6-year, 100,000-mile limited warranty, roadside assistance, and a 160-point quality assurance inspection. The specials of the week at LNS Toyota, 300 Rural Acres Drive in Beckley. 05 Corollas, $13,818. 05 Camry, $17,585. Offers on select models with approved credit. Prices plus tax, tag, and registration fees. Dealer retains rebates and incentives. Example, 2001 Solara, $270 per month for 48 months at 3.99% financing with zero down. Offer ends 3/31/05.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Doug Cunningham.
A 3.5-year struggle between a coalition representing Immokalee tomato farmers and Taco Bell has finally ended with the company vowing to work for the betterment of workers' rights throughout the industry. The company has promised to pay a penny per pound of tomato surcharge and to help raise farm labor standards by lobbying other major fast food players alongside the coalition.
It represents immediate change, but also represents hope for the future.
Julia Perkins is a representative of the coalition. She says that in the immediate future, the workers and the coalition plan to celebrate the victory, but the long-term goal is to convince the rest of the industry to respect the human rights of their workers.
We feel like it should be a no-brainer now, since Taco Bell and Yumbo has decided to do it. It should be an easy sell to some of the other fast food chains.
The president of Teamsters Local 830 in the Hatboro, Pennsylvania area is facing a March 17th court date after being arrested and having his camera seized at a borough council meeting. Joe Brock Jr. says he was at the meeting on behalf of a Teamsters member being fired by Hatboro. Brock allegedly refused to sit down while seeking answers on the status of the worker, and he was arrested.
They claimed I would not sit down. They physically removed me. They arrested me. They cuffed me. They stole my. They wrestled my camera out of my hand. I'm also a member of the press. They took my camera out of my hand, and they've yet to return my camera. They printed me, took my mugshot, the whole nine yards.
Brock says he'll vigorously defend himself and the Teamsters will defend the worker in an effort to get the worker his job back.
For the employee, we've got the Pennsylvania Labor Relations Board, who we now have to wait for them to hear his case. We're going to set up some rallies at the council president. We're going to meet him at church Sunday with some leaflets explaining to his congregation what he's doing to working families. We've got our joint councils and the AFL-CIO in this area that are putting out notices. A lot of people are coming to this gentleman's aid.
Brock says the worker, Brent Sine, was fired for union activity.
This is a council that's doing this because an employee exercised their free choice to join a union, and they just cannot accept that, and they're going to do everything in their power to put an end to it.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. Having a odd work shift may not be as odd as it used to be. According to the U.S. Bureau of Labor Statistics, nearly a fifth of the workforce hit the time clock outside of the hours between 7 a.m. and 7 p.m. That works out to roughly 24 million Americans, an increase of 11% since 1991 for white-collar workers and 6% for blue-collar. Reasons cited include better pay, spending time with family, and the need to gain experience.
You've been listening to WIN, Workers' Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
WWNR Beckley.
He's got a brain, and he's not afraid to use it. Liberally, of course. Here's Bob Kincaid.
Welcome back. You know, I was thinking after our chat with the freeway blogger, it doesn't necessarily, and I think he would probably agree with me on this, it doesn't necessarily have to be limited to the war or a specific personality. Although there's a beautiful one on there with a picture of David Koresh that says, "Our leader is a very devout man with a ranch near Waco." There are other issues, though. And maybe it's time to turn it around. For instance, I could well imagine that, I'm absolutely certain, in fact, that there are progressive Democrats liberals, decent human beings in the state of Delaware. And I can't think of a better freeway blog than to put some sort of a picture up of Joe Biden and just refer to him as Dino Biden. Dino Biden, Democrat in name only. Let's see. Where is he? The roll call vote. You got to listen to the name of this thing. S-256. Bankruptcy Abuse Prevention and here's the fun part. You think we have not entered an Orwellian era in America? Bankruptcy Abuse Prevention and Consumer Protection Act of 2005. Let's see. Hillary didn't vote. That can be understood from the fact that, well, you know, Bill was getting carved on today. Let's see. Byron Dorgan, Democrat, North Dakota, nay, voted against it. Dick Durbin, Illinois, voted nay, voted against it. Barack Obama voted against it. Now, do you remember a long time back when I told you I was a little bit nervous about the new Senate Minority Leader, Harry Reid of Nevada? Reid, Democrat, Nevada. Yay. But there it is. Biden, Democrat, Delaware. Yay. Bingaman, Democrat, New Mexico. Yay. Barbara Boxer has a spine, Democrat, California. Nay. Oh, goodness, and this one hurts me. But you know what? I'm not going to sit here and tell and just make stuff up. When I get my little heart broken, I'm going to tell you about it. Mercy. Here it is. Well, Rockefeller, Democrat, West Virginia, nay, voted against putting the wood to middle-class families. Byrd, Democrat, West Virginia. Yay. Yay. I revere that man and I respect that man, but on two occasions with regard to this bankruptcy bill, he made a terrible, terrible, terrible mistake. Do you know what cloture is? Not closure, cloture, C-L-O-T-U-R-E. That is the rule in the Senate that suspends debate. If you're old enough to have actually had a civics class and you paid attention in it, you know that one of the things that most widely differentiates the Senate from the House of Representatives is the idea that the Senate can have unlimited debate, and that in fact debate is unlimited unless cloture is invoked. That's why, and you've got to be careful when you hear these right wing nuts out there saying that there's nothing in the Constitution that says you got to have a supermajority in order to confirm a judge. When you hear that, supermajority, you know what's happening? You're being lied to again. Dirty, rotten, filthy, stinking lies. Okay? There is no such thing as a supermajority, but the nature of the Senate is such that debate will go on until the question is called. And to call the question involves this idea of cloture. And to achieve cloture, 60 members of the Senate out of the 100 in the body must vote in favor of suspending or ending debate. That is a cloture vote. That is what the right wing nuts mean when they say, there's a supermajority. Hi, I'm supermajority. Faster than a speeding bill. No such critter. It's merely a matter of cloture. And frankly, I like a Senate that debates. That's what makes the Senate so special. is the fact. Well, and then, you know, it goes back to whether there's any truth or not. It may be apocrypha. That business about the Constitutional Convention, and they were trying to decide how they were going to set up the legislative body of the United States. And I guess at that point in time, George Washington is said to have been enjoying a cup of tea. And they had already set the House of Representatives up as rather a noisy place. And Washington picked up his hot, steaming cup of tea, and he poured a bit of it into the saucer. And he said, just as this tea will cool faster in the saucer, so too will the passions of the House be moderated by the cool and dispassionate debate of the Senate. So when you hear these wingnuts screaming about how there ain't no such thing as a supermajority in the Constitution, you know, mainly because they listen to filthy, lying, rascal pigs like Flush Flemball and the rest of the right-wing megaphone media. When you hear that, at least know that you're being handed a big old can full of bug spray. Okay? But in the debate about the bankruptcy bill, there was an opportunity to make this nightmarish thing for the middle class drop dead. And that was to never let debate on it end. There was a cloture vote on this bill, Senate 256, the Bankruptcy, Abuse, and Consumer Protection Act of 2005. Yeah, consumers getting protected by not limiting interest rates to 30%. Yeah, I feel safer as a consumer now, Senate. Thanks. But there was a cloture vote on it that required 60 votes. The Republicans do not have 60 members. Every Republican voted for cloture. 14 Democrats got along and went along and voted for cloture as well. It grieves me to tell you that Senator Byrd was one of those who voted for cloture. Dino Biden was another one. I don't expect my elected representatives to agree with them, nor them to agree with me at all times. That was a howling mistake, and I have no idea what led to it or what led to that decision. But Senator Rockefeller voted against making West Virginians and Americans suffer at the hands of credit card companies and insurance companies and medical, with their medical bills. Because you do realize, of course, that most bankruptcies are a function either of crushing medical debt and frequently of divorce. What this now means is that most Americans will not be able to go into Chapter 7 bankruptcy and just have their debts forgiven. You know, I had a professor once who said that the bankruptcy laws were a financial manifestation of Christian grace. That bankruptcy was the forgiveness of financial sin. And I used to go along with that idea until I realized what was going on. People who have insurance, people who have health insurance, are still crushed by their debts, by what's left over when the insurance is done paying. And they have to file bankruptcy. And now, because of this legislation that will go to the House of Representatives and will be greased like a pig at a 4th of July rally, it'll be greased to go through the House of Representatives. Because of this, people who are already suffering enough out of the woe that comes with catastrophic illness will be told by some bankruptcy judge, I'm sorry, American, you're not qualified to file under Chapter 7. You have to go to Chapter 13, and I don't care how little money you have left over. You will pay these predatory credit card companies, these medical service providers, you will pay them, you know, how much? $100, $200, $300, $400, $500 a month. And that's however much that payment plan winds up to being, is that much less money they're going to be able to use to feed their children, keep the lights on, pay the gas bill, stay alive. Who would vote? And why would you vote for this bill if you weren't a Republican? Senator Byrd has done many, many wonderful things for this state, for this nation. A man who knew right from wrong and stood up about the Iraq War and voted the right way on these amendments. You remember they tried to set it up where if, for instance, you went into bankruptcy because you were in the National Guard and got called to Iraq for 2 years, and your finances were destroyed as a result, there was an amendment that would have given you, you know, the Iraq War veteran, a bit of mercy, and it was killed. Senator Byrd voted in favor of that amendment, but he voted in favor of cloture, and he voted in the end in favor of this bill. And while I don't pretend to understand all the ins and outs of the Senate, I am sore pressed to figure out why you would vote in favor of this nightmare. I mean, Tom Harkin, a great man from Iowa, voted against it. And then Senator Nelson from Florida, a Democrat who had offered the amendment that would have protected Americans who have been victims of identity theft, which was defeated, turns around and votes in favor of it. What message are they trying to send to America, these Democrats, by voting against working Americans? You know, the base of the Democratic Party. I don't know. Let's go to the phones. Jim's with us. Hey, Jim, you're head on.
Hey, Bob, how you doing?
I've been better.
Oh, I see.
This go-along-get-along-ism is going to ultimately be the end of our party, I'm afraid.
Well, I don't know. I listen to your interstate blogger or your freeway blogger.
The freeway blogger. Yeah, good guy.
They seek him here, they seek him there. The princes seek him everywhere. Is he in heaven or is he in hell? The damned elusive Pimpernel.
And that's I think that's how he fashions himself.
Well, you know, I thought, getting back to these amendments to the bankruptcy bill, I thought that they voted to. Now, that was proposed by Durbin of Illinois, correct?
One of them was.
I thought that one went through.
No.
Not even according to the schedule that if the man were 50% of the debt were incurred while in service?
I looked at it last night. That amendment was defeated.
Well, Bob, they were voting on it this afternoon.
Well, that must have been a second amendment then, because the...
They had some substantive amendments on C-SPAN this afternoon. I'm not sure. I thought that the one with dealing with the troops, maybe it was the amended version of his amendment. I'm not sure.
Okay, that's possible then.
But through 99-1. I don't know. I'm not disputing you, but I'm just...
If they turned around and some Republican offered it, I'm sure it turned into a good idea almost overnight.
Well, I don't understand how they can, in good conscience, do this. Now, I want to tell you a story here. It won't take long.
Okay.
I knew this guy. He's from Huntington originally, but moved down to Columbia. And he has OCD. And what this has got to do with, I don't know. But he would sit there all night, and with all these credit cards that he managed to get, and he would just order all this stuff. Okay?
Oh, mercy.
I mean, when it would come to his house, he wouldn't even open it. I mean, he had boxes stacked up. I mean, well, when payday finally came, what he had to do was to find some company that would take a mortgage on his house. He would pay $300 a month to them, and upon his death, his house would go to that company.
Hmm.
To keep him from going to the wall.
Yeah.
And he told me all the while when he was doing this, I said, you know, I said, man, I said, you don't need that stuff, and I don't believe this OCD is going to, is going to flush. And, you know what you're doing. And apparently, when he tried to get off of some type of mental thing, it didn't quite work.
Well,
those are people who, in my opinion, should pay. So he was just sitting up there all night thinking he was going to screw these people and get out of it. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
But now, since the years from now, according to Molly Evans, I think I've said this before, between 1981 and 2001, bankruptcies due to medical problems have increased 2,000%.
Oh, I don't doubt it. And see, I would even differ. The bankruptcy, Jim, I have a problem with the credit card companies.
Oh, I have big problems with them.
You know, the question that still has yet to be answered by anyone is, okay, we're going to hold all these American families responsible who use these credit cards for reasons known best to them.
What do you mean by American families? You mean other than the card holder?
No, I'm talking about card holders, American families that get credit cards and use them for reasons that, you know, are known best to them.
Right.
And yet, we're not going to hold responsible these credit card companies who literally prey upon families and prey upon their desperation. No, we're going to make these people service that 19, 20, 30% interest rate. Where is the fairness in that?
Well,
where is the personal responsibility?
Let me tell you one more thing, and I know you're going to go. You get to the bottom of the hour. I know you got to hit the advertisements for top of the hour, really. This afternoon, I had made an analogy about, you know, there was a thing on TV that was basically making Social Security analogous to the Titanic, and it was going to hit an iceberg and sink. And that was the Republican mindset behind the ad.
Yeah.
And I thought to myself, you fool, you fool. Well, number one, I'm a member of the Titanic Historical Society because I had a family member go down on that boat.
Really?
I sure did, great uncle. And his body was never recovered. And I grew up with Titanic. I have a piece of coal from the Titanic that was sent to me by Tulloch and Ballard.
Mm-hmm.
But the thing about it is, if you want to use the analogy, George Bush and his crowd, they're the ones who are restricting the number of lifeboats on the ship.
Yes.
They're the Board of Trade who said you only had to have 19 or 15 on a boat that size. And if they're doing anything, they're the ones driving it right into the iceberg and stripping the number of lifeboats, because that's what Social Security is a lifeboat.
Well, that, and you can make another comparison, Jim, to the effect that they're calling Social Security the Titanic, when actually it's like a modern aircraft carrier. It is virtually unsinkable.
I think Lusitania would be more accurate because they're trying to torpedo it.
Right.
And I'll tell you, and some fool called in after me and said, well, those 1,505 people who died on the Titanic didn't die because they didn't have enough lifeboats. It died because the ship sank.
Oh, God. Well, there's no help in some people, Jim,
I
guess.
I called back and I told Dr. Bill, and I said, Dr. Bill, I said, you know, this makes me understand why this country is going to hell in a handbasket.
Well, I certainly understand that, Jim. We got to roll, though. We're up against the top of the hour. Thanks so much. All right. This is News Talk 620 WWNR, Beckley, West Virginia, and we'll be back after ABC News, which I'm finding to be very, very enjoyable. I'm Bob. This is Head On.
Proud of over 50 years of broadcasting history.
You can depend on us.
News Talk 620 WWNR, Beckley. It's 8 o'clock.
Hi, I'm Bob Vila. Protect yourself from tetanus in your garden and diphtheria, another possibly fatal infection. Get your vaccination every 10 years. If it's been 10, do it again. To learn more, visit www.nfid.org.
News Talk 620 WWNR, keeping you informed with Southern West Virginia's most accurate and dependable forecast.
Here is your forecast from the Weather Channel. Another front moving in for tonight, so a 1-2 chance of light snow showers and flurries expected. Low around 30 early Friday. We'll climb out of that into the low and mid-30s, so kind of a raw afternoon with a 6-10 likelihood that the snow showers will persist throughout the day. Tomorrow night, 1 to 2 additional inches, and we'll hold in a slight chance of snow showers on Saturday. Pretty raw again, with a high only in the mid-20s, and look for increased sun by the end of the weekend. High Sunday, around 32.
Knowledge is power. News Talk 620, WWNR.
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head-on with Bob Kincaid.
Welcome back. 6 minutes after 8 o'clock, second hour of Head On for this Thursday night. In light of what the Senate did to us today with this bankruptcy bill, most of them Republicans, some get-along Democrats, I guess maybe some of them were thinking that what's sauce for the goose is sauce for the gander. This report came out today. U.S. tax revenues may barely cover interest payments on the federal debt if current deficit-producing tax and spending policies are maintained, according to the GAO, the Government Accounting Office. The Comptroller General, David Walker, told federal lawmakers we could be doing nothing more than paying interest on the debt in 2040. Now, meanwhile, that's a problem. That should bother you. That means we are fast approaching a time when we really are hanging bad paper all over the world. When all we can do is service our debt. That might constitute a Social Security crisis. There isn't one now. But meanwhile, you heard it when Jim was talking, this ad that's going around, Social Security is like the Titanic. Ugh. God, don't you get tired of the scare tactics. But Comptroller General David Walker said that the scenario assumes President Bush's tax cuts are made permanent and spending for programs other than for health care and retirement grow with the economy. Okay? Medicare and Medicaid are a problem. They need to be fixed so that... And notice the use of the word fixed. Not destroyed. Fixed. A lot of Republicans have this idea that fixed and destroyed are one and the same thing. They're not. Fixed means you make it possible for future generations to have the medical safety net that is Medicare and Medicaid. Destroyed means you get rid of it. What they would like to do is get rid of it. What's our Medicaid shortfall this year? It was in the papers a week or so ago, $150 million or so. Walker said, listen carefully, Social Security is not now facing a crisis. Listen to this quote. Absent meaningful changes to these programs, the nations will ultimately have to choose among persistent escalating federal deficits, huge tax increases, and or dramatic budget cuts. Well, we know which way George Bush wants to go. The captain of the Titanic thinks that we need to do drastic budget cuts right now. The only thing is he doesn't want to cut anything but the things that help human beings. You know, cut the programs that especially that help human beings who don't happen to be in the Tony set that makes $1 million a year or more. How about that? We're going to be making the minimum monthly payment as a federal government. And what was that CIA report from a couple of weeks ago? That, by 2020 or so, the United States will no longer be a world power? That's the CIA. There, if you connect the dots, there are an abundance of reasons for you to be very, very concerned if we can tear ourselves away from the television long enough to be concerned. Some of these things should make you sit up in the middle of the night with a cold sweat running off the top of your head. Because if this nation turns into a debtor nation that can only service the interest on its debt, not the debt itself,
we're on the road to ruin. And I'm not, you know, breaking out my Chicken Little. Much more of George Bush, and the sky will be falling. We could be doing nothing more than paying interest on the debt in 2040. Pay attention. This is not good news. What do you make of that? Do we need to make George Bush's tax cuts for the rich permanent, or do we need to sober up? I'm advocating sober up. Don't know about you. Let's go to the phones. Jeff is with us. Hey, Jeff, you're head on. There you are.
Hey, there you are. Hello.
Yeah.
Hello.
Hello.
Are you there?
Can you hear me yet?
Yeah, I got you in there. Talking about the debt, eh?
Yep. GAO says that the debt, we could be servicing nothing but the interest on the debt by 2040 if we don't sober up.
The Greenspan is coming out in the last week or two. He wants to try to get into a system of pay-as-you-go.
Well, that's
probably a good idea, ain't it?
Well, it depends on what you're talking about, Jeff.
The government, the budget.
You mean balance the budget every year?
Yeah.
Kind of hard to argue with that, isn't it?
Yeah.
But we won't be doing it, giving away, you know, making these tax cuts for the rich permanent.
Well, not with tax cuts. Everybody got some of it.
I got my $300 check. Woohoo!
Oh, come on, Bob. Don't try to. You know how.
Actually, I got my three. Actually, Jeff, I got my $300 loan.
How much did you get for each of your kids?
I don't
know. He increased. You know your taxes are, don't you?
I haven't done them yet, frankly.
Well, last year you did them, didn't you?
Well, of course I did, and I'm not going to announce what my taxes were on the air, Jeff. It's none of your business.
But just don't try to, you know, Bush gave everybody with children a larger child tax credit.
Yeah, and look what it's going to cost my children down the road, Jeff.
Well, he traded
my children's birthright for a bowl of porridge.
Did you send it back then?
No, I did not send it back.
Okay. You took it, didn't you?
Did I take it?
Yeah.
No, I took my taxes to H&R Block. I handed them to them. I said, do them. They handed me the papers. I signed them.
Well, I mean, you know, everybody complains about taxes, but when it's time to get them, Jeff, over
50% of these tax cuts went to people making went to 1% of the country. 50% of the tax cuts went to 1% of the country.
Well, the top 10% pay 90% of the taxes.
Yes, I know. I know you listened to Rush Limbaugh. I understand that, but we are talking about a progressive tax system here,
where the
rich are supposed to pay more of the taxes.
That's what we were talking about. Now we're talking about more fair taxes.
Oh, yeah, bring on the fair tax.
You know,
yeah, bring on the national sales tax, Jeff. I know you're all for that. It's been introduced in the House.
But, you know, the fact is...
So you feel like it's more fair for you to pay a greater percentage of your household income than some guy that makes $10 million a year pays of his. That's more fair, Jeff?
I'm not certain that's the way it is.
That is the way it is.
I've never seen anybody...
We are supposed to have a progressive income tax.
I've never seen anybody... that makes $10 million a year. I've never seen their tax return.
You've probably never met somebody that makes $10 million a year. I mean, yeah, probably some truth in that, too. But the point is, we are facing a crisis, Jeff. You know, sticking your head in the sand doesn't make it go away. There is no Social Security crisis. We have real problems with Medicare and Medicaid, and we are facing becoming, you know, a minimum monthly payment nation.
The budget deficit is going down per quarter. The last quarter of 2004 is lower than it was the last quarter of 2003.
Okay.
It's not going up as fast as it was. And, you know, in federal budget doesn't just...
Jeff, I'm going to tell you a little
it's
secret.
It's like a coal train. It doesn't stop on a dime.
I'm going to tell you a little secret. Those budget deficit numbers don't include the war, buddy.
Well, I understand that, but they didn't include the war in the year before that either.
Right.
So, you know, it's the same thing.
Yeah, it's blue smoke and mirrors. We're being lied to. Thanks a lot, Jeff. I gotta hit the break. All right. When we come back, more of your phone calls at 252-6200, outside Beckley, 800-620-9967. This is Head On. I'm Bob Kincaid.
Head On.
Hi, this is Linda Luger, Executive Director of the United Way of Southern West Virginia. Thanks to all the United Way volunteers for the assistance they provided during the United Way 2004 campaign. Without them, we would not be able to provide the support necessary for our 20 nonprofit agencies that help those who are unable to help themselves. Due to the time spent by volunteers attending meetings, making presentations, making phone calls, asking for contributions, helping with the planning and staging of campaign events, taking time from a busy schedule to film or record a TV or radio spot, and numerous other activities, we have had a successful campaign. Without the time and effort provided by these caring individuals in Raleigh, Nicholas, Fayette, and Summers counties, this would not have been possible. Thumbs up, hats off, and thanks. Because of you, the United Way of Southern West Virginia continues to make a lasting impression on our community. If you would like to be a United Way volunteer, please contact me at 253-2111.
Hey, look, it's a text message.
What's it say?
Here for you.
Really?
Hey, Cellular One wants you to get the message. We're here for you. That's right. Cellular One is here for you in Beckley, Pineville, Bluefield, Welch, Lewisburg, White Sulphur Springs, Oakville, and more places in West Virginia and the country than ever before. The company that Beckley Register Herald readers voted favorite place to buy cellular phones is here for you with loads of anytime minutes, including unlimited nights and weekends. Plus, Cellular One's here with flip phones, camera phones, even free phones. But most importantly, Cellular One is here with dependable local customer service. Really? So get a phone, get a plan, and get it now from Cellular One, West Virginia's only locally owned and operated wireless provider. We're here for you. Bring your home or wireless number to Cellular One and get free activation and a free phone. Visit your neighborhood Cellular One store for more information.
WWNR Beckley.
A man who just loves conservatives. Baked, boiled, or fried. Here's Bob Kincaid.
Welcome back. 19 minutes after 8 o'clock at Head On. I'm Bob Kincaid. We got one line open if you want to take advantage of it. We try to be nice to first-time callers. Frank's with us. Hey, Frank, you're Head On.
How you doing, Bob? I appreciate your show, buddy. I really do.
Thank you.
Hey, listen, I bet President Bush is going to have a nice retirement, wouldn't you say?
I'm guessing.
Well, I just want to let you know I'm a Republican, and I'm a Christian, and I voted for John Kerry.
Well, God bless you, sir.
And I will always vote for a Democrat now.
Why is that?
Well, after what he's trying to do to Social Security and everything, it's pitiful.
Well, the mask is kind of off, isn't it, Frank?
I'm telling you.
Whether it's the bankruptcy bill or, there's 100 different things you can look at it and see. I understand you're a Christian, and I honor that. But they played that card, and yet it's turning out there's nothing Christian about him.
Exactly.
I don't think if you apply the what would Jesus do test to the bankruptcy bill, would Jesus make it harder on the poor?
No. That was pitiful. That was pitiful.
It's heartbreaking.
Yeah, I tell you, it makes you almost sick.
Yeah, it does.
And I just want to let you know that I appreciate what you're doing, and I support you.
Well, thank you, Frank. I do appreciate it. I hope you won't be a stranger.
Well, thank you a lot.
All right, take care.
Bye-bye.
All right, that's inspiring. Ed. Hey, Ed, you're Head On.
Yeah, Bob, how you doing this evening?
I'm doing great. Yourself?
I'm doing pretty good. Just listening. I'm glad, just like you are, I'm really inspired that people are starting to see what's going on. And one of the subjects I've got to talk about is no reflection to the guy that just called in.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, we've talked before on preachers.
Mm-hmm.
And have you seen the latest on Benny Hill, Hinn?
Tax cheat?
Well, he's got him a house. It was $10 million, 8 bathrooms in it. I forget how many rooms. And spent $2,800 and something on one suite. And then $1,700 and $1,800 at different times of the people's money. They tracked him out. And of all the healings that he's supposed to have done, not a one, not a one has occurred.
Oh, no, of course. I mean, he's a fraud. All you have to do is watch him. Where did you, I don't know how I missed this, Ed. Where did you,
I think it was on 48 hours. Yeah, one of the programs like 48 hours or 60 minutes or something that they checked on him. And he also, the one little boy that he conned into saying that he was healed had an eye problem, and he had a degenerative condition of the eyes. And the little boy, he asked him, said, can you see yet? And he said, yes. He got back home, and a couple months later, his uncle said, how are you seeing now? And he said, God must have took a break.
That
is a stinking pity. You know, that guy ought to be taken out and horsewhipped. Supposed to be representing the Christian. You're talking about a falling away of the church.
Mm-hmm.
These kind of people like him and old Farwell and Pat Robinson and people like that.
That's right.
They're the ones that, you know, the Bible talks about a falling away in the last days.
Mm-hmm.
It didn't say how it was going to occur, but it looks like, to me, like, in fact, Benny Hinn lost 10% of his tithe money after, or whatever he calls it, after the first exposure to this. And it's hard to tell what it'll go down to now.
Well, you know, Ed, this is wrong on a number of levels. Hinn's greed, and most of these charlatans' greed, is sickening in and of itself and all by itself. What is worse, though, is when you take a little boy like that, or if you take a trusting, anyone who abuses the faith of another individual has most assuredly got to have a special place in our disdain, in our disgust. Because what that man did, more than anything else to that little boy, what that man did is he drove him away from Christ.
That's right. He will never have the faith because he told him that. What do you think it did to his family? And the whole nation that watched that program, they are the deterrent to the church movement and to the real Christian movement. And I really admire someone that tries to hold up their end to the Bible.
Yeah, and there are and let's be straight on this, Ed. There are people out there like that. There's a magazine out there called Sojourners. I've read it on a number of times, and it's full of what strikes me as Christianity, the way that you would want it to, you would hope it would be practiced, not full of who would Jesus bomb, and not who would Jesus con. I mean, is there anybody out there that really believes that the likes of this Benny Hinn or Jimmy Swaggart or Richard Roberts, son of Oral Roberts, or Jerry Falwell, and isn't Pat Robertson's son in on the charade now? I think he is.
Well, I know that who's the healer, the one that told him that God told him if let him come up 25 million.
Yeah, that was Oral Roberts.
God was going to kill him. Now his son is in it. I can't think of his name right off.
Well, what I'm getting at here,
Oral Roberts.
You know, I don't think there's really. It must be a very small minority, Ed, that thinks that these people are actually living a Christian existence.
Yeah. Well, you know who gave him the money?
No.
A gambler out of Atlanta.
Oh, mercy.
And so, I mean, said, well, we wouldn't want poor God to kill poor Oral Roberts, would we? Yeah, that's a stinking shame. And he took the money.
Well, listen, these televangelists would take the money from Satan himself.
Uh-huh.
And the proof is in the pudding. Two of them that I can think of, Jerry Falwell and James Robison, have both been bailed out by Reverend Sun Myung Moon.
Uh-huh.
And this guy goes around saying Jesus is a failure. That's what Moon says. And,
yeah.
But you know, when money was tight, Falwell didn't have any qualms whatsoever against taking his money.
Yeah, he is a stinking joke to the Christian movement. And don't get me wrong, I really believe that what's being held together is being held together by the Christians today. But hypocrites like those guys, I'm telling you, they ought not to listen to them at the very least.
Right.
But let me change the subject a little bit, because I think we both agree on what these preachers are for. Number one, they take the people's money, their tithe money, and turn around and back people that vote against them. They
mm-hmm.
put these people in office that do things against the working class people, and they're the ones that's paying the tithe. And, you know, to beat it off, they're above higher wages. They're against that. And it don't seem to faze them a bit that they're cutting their own throat. If I had a man paying me 10% of what he made, I would only make $100 an hour.
Yeah.
They're idiots. But anyway, I wanted to tell you, I listened to one of the other programs, and they had, it's all hypothetical, I guess, but they had a discussion on one of the other programs, and gave them a choice between, if they had to choose, what would they choose between, medical care or Social Security or their checks? And, you know, that is a stinking pitiful.
No, yes, it is.
And, you know, there's no need and have to choose.
No,
this nation was, before George Bush got in, wealthy enough to support both.
Yes.
And I didn't even call in on nothing on it until I had time to settle down, because that just blows your mind. It makes you just want to go wild on them.
Well, it does. And you know, in some ways, I guess that's kind of what's hoped for. But, you know, Ed, you're right in what you did. If we have the will to do it, we have the means to do it.
Yeah.
The fact of the matter is, there, as Senator Kennedy said, there is no reason in the world why, someone who works 40 hours a week in this, the one of the wealthiest nations on earth should be making, $5.15 an hour. That's criminal. Study after study after study shows, Ed, a single person can't live on $5.15 an hour, let alone, feed children, clothe children, keep a roof over their head. It is impossible. We had the story a couple of months ago. You can't rent an apartment in most of this country working on minimum wage.
Yeah. Well, we had one guy today call in on one of the programs that said Kennedy should be knocked on his ass. You know, they might as well, to start with, he has nothing in it. But can run his blabber mouth. But Kennedy was put in by another state.
Well, the fact of the matter is, Ed, Ted Kennedy has more starch, more guts, and more gumption than 99 9/10% of the people who criticize him. That family has bled for America. That family, you know, rich as Croesus, but they have an understanding of social responsibility. They try to do something decent with some of the money. And you know, I've got nothing for anybody who says that kind of garbage about Ted.
Well, you know what it's coming to, that knocking on your ass, as they call it, that goes both ways, and I always got mine with me, and I'll take the same position Kennedy does, and I don't care if the blabbermouth, you know, I always had respect for most of what he said. But he finally come out for what he was today.
Well, I understand.
I got another comment to make, and I'll get off of here.
Okay.
Running their mouth on Byrd, Ray Hall, and Rockefeller, it seems to be a favorite thing of the Republican Party.
Well, it is.
But I heard a Republican say that we might as well get used to Bush. You know, I can say to the Republicans, get used to Byrd. Because we're going to put him in there again if he wants to run.
Well, we will indeed. But I got to tell you, Ed, I'm a little displeased with Senator Byrd right now.
Right now I am, but you know,
I don't think that was the right thing to do, voting for this bankruptcy bill.
No, I don't either. Up until the last 4 years, I didn't support him a whole lot until he started coming out with the remarks against the war and the stuff that's going on. In fact, I called his office myself and told him it was about time. that he realized Clinton was wasn't a bipartisan deal, that this was a Republican charge against
Bill Clinton.
Bill
yeah.
Clinton when he was in it, and it was about time he found out which side he was on. I told the man's office that.
Mm-hmm.
And so, but like I say to the Republicans again, get used to it. You'll love it. You know?
Yeah.
And Bob, I'll talk to you later.
All right, Ed. Thanks so much.
Uh-huh.
All right. Time for our bottom of the hour break. News update from Carl Mack, followed by Jim Hightower's commentary. When we come back, well, I think there's a couple of things you ought to know about. We've talked a little bit about this, the so-called medical malpractice crisis. Well, the lie's been put to that one again. How about that? This is Head On. I'm Bob Kincaid.
On. Good evening. This is Carl Mack, WWNR News. A random survey of almost 550 pharmacists in West Virginia has found that many pharmacies are understaffed because there's a shortage of pharmacists. The survey was conducted by the University of Charleston. It was sent to one-third of the state's 1,650 pharmacists on the West Virginia Board of Pharmacy's active roster. About 175 surveys were returned for a response rate of 32%. The private university has been working for the past couple of years to gain accreditation for what would become the state's second pharmacy school. School officials plan to use the survey in an attempt to gain accreditation for the program this coming spring. Nicholas County authorities are investigating the death of a Craigsville woman found in her bed Tuesday with a gunshot wound. 24-year-old Melinda Siebert was pronounced dead on the scene yesterday morning by a Nicholas County medical examiner. Authorities say she was killed by a 9mm pistol. The Nicholas County Sheriff's Office says Siebert's death is an active case, but would not say if her death was homicide. The body was found in a home on Park Avenue in Craigsville. It's now been sent to the state medical examiner's office for autopsy. The House Banking Committee passed out a bill yesterday that will allow West Virginia's banks to be more competitive nationwide. The bill provides for complete parity for bank powers between state chartered banks and national banks and other financial service providers. A Charleston sanitation worker was injured after collecting a garbage bag that contained suspected methamphetamine ingredients that splashed him and caught fire. Court records show that the worker, whose condition was not released today, was splashed with the bag's contents as he threw it into the back of a truck early yesterday morning. The materials reportedly started a fire that came close to the worker's face. That's the news. Now here's the forecast for this evening and tonight. Increasing cloudiness. For tonight, a chance of snow showers and rain showers, then snow showers after midnight tonight. Not as cold with a low tonight near 30. But then for Friday, snow showers in the morning, rain and snow showers in the afternoon, about an inch accumulation, they think, with temperatures in the upper 30s. For News Talk 620, this is Carl Mack, when you need to know.
George W. has shown again and again that he won't ever let reality get in the way of ideology. Whether the issue is his Iraq attack, global warming, privatization of Social Security, tax cuts for the rich, whatever. Now the Bushites are even pushing ideology over geology. Bush Cheney and company are determined to win congressional approval of their plan to allow oil companies to drill and pump in the pristine reaches of ANWR, the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge. George has even played the security card, declaring that our national security makes it urgent to open this unspoiled wilderness to the oil giants. But in a gusher of political irony, guess what? The oil giants have little interest in drilling there. Even a Bush advisor on this issue confided that, quote, no oil company really cares about ANWR, adding that if the government gave them the drilling leases for free, they wouldn't take them. Indeed, Chevron, Texaco, BP, and ConocoPhillips have so little interest in ANWR that they have withdrawn from the chief lobbying front behind Bush's push to open the refuge. Why the corporate disinterest? Because, unlike George, companies have to base their decisions at least partially on reality. And the geological reality is that Anwar doesn't hold enough oil to make private investment there worthwhile. Only one actual test of the refuge's oil potential has been done, a secret test by Chevron Texaco and BP, two of the giants that have now backed away from Bush's Anwar scheme. If it had real production potential, these profit seekers would be lobbying hard to get in there. This is Jim Hightower saying, what's really behind the Bushites' insistence on drilling in a wildlife refuge is nothing but their reactionary, knee-jerk, laissez-faire ideology. They hate the idea that the public can protect any piece of nature from corporate intrusion, even if the corporations don't choose to intrude. Anwar is a case of their ideological loopiness.
A message from the American Library Association and Bernie Mac about the hard times facing our nation's libraries.
Hey, I'm Bernie Mac. The libraries need your help. Many are forced to cut back hours, reduce services, and even close their doors. So what can you do? I tell you what. Support your local library and help keep your library doors open. Contact your local library to find out how you can make a difference in your community. The future is at your library. So make sure your library has a future. Just a little something from the Mac.
Brought to you by the Campaign for America's Libraries. For more information, visit the American Library Association website at www.ala.org.
This is Deborah Ray with today's Nutrition Notebook. Hot flashes are the bane of thousands of women who enter menopause each day in this country. But why don't the symptoms of menopause affect menopausal women in countries like Japan like they do in the U.S.? A new study appears to shed light on this medical dilemma. Women who smoke or are obese were twice as likely to have hot flashes that were more severe and occurred more frequently. Smoking does alter the metabolism of hormones such as estrogen. Also, smoking destroys follicles in the ovaries, which causes earlier ovarian failure. These findings appear to explain why women who smoke seem to have an earlier onset of menopause and its symptoms. These problems appear to be preventable because smokers who quit before their first menopausal symptoms had hot flashes with the same intensity and rate of occurrence as those who never smoked. So what else do women who smoke need to hear to quit? Well, that's today's Nutrition Notebook. For more nutrition news, log on to HealthyTalkRadio.com.
Fight the flu bug. Call Bioactive Nutrients at 1-800-879-6504 and ask about Olive Leaf Extract, the ultimate immune system defense supplement. Our 800-milligram Olive Leaf Extract capsule is the strongest on the market, and it really works. Ask our friendly representatives about our Buy 2, Get 1 Free special and get on the road to a healthier you. Call Bioactive Nutrients today, 1-800-879-6504, the strongest Olive Leaf Extract on the market today. From Bioactive Nutrients, call 1-800-879-6504.
WWNR Beckley.
West Virginia's only live nighttime talker, Bob Kincaid.
Welcome back. It's about 20 minutes before 9 o'clock. Nice email from our FOB. That's FOB, Judy. She writes in about last night's show. Hey, Bob, I'm so mad about the student that called from Independence High. His parents and other students need to go to the board and complain. But she also notes... Daniel got at least a start and called me. She said, I think it takes a lot for students to step out, but they must. She said, I'm so proud of Daniel. We need more kids like him. I think we need more kids like Daniel, too, and they've got a great group going down there at Independence High now. You know, they're not drinking the Kool-Aid. They see, you know, they understand because, you know, George isn't turning the Iraq meat grinder for me. He's turning it for them. Or the Syria meat grinder, or the Iran meat grinder. It's all for people, you know, Daniel's age. And they understand. And in that understanding, I think they're sharing it with other students. On the other hand, to have a teacher who argues in favor of just mowing down people indiscriminately, that's not the talk of a teacher. That's the talk of a mass murderer. Okay. And that apparently is going on to Independence, and it's very, very disturbing. Let's go back to the phones. Jeff wanted to come back. Hey, Jeff, you're head on.
Hey, Bob, how you doing?
What's going on?
Hey, man, in that last call, I want to tell you something. I try not to, when I'm, like, talking to one of you guys on the phone or debating somebody like that,
I try not to get into the personal realm. I don't think that's a very good debating tactic, and it's not very fair.
Well, it's general.
And you,
No, go ahead.
And, you know, and you volunteered that you have children and things like that. And then that last call, I kind of said, well, you know, you got your children tax credit, stuff like that. And that's kind of getting into the personal realm, and I don't think I should have done that.
Well, I apologize. Thank you for being man enough to do that, Jeff. I mean, and I wasn't trying to be mean when I said, you know, frankly, I don't remember what's on my tax return from last year.
That's not
what's more, you know, we've seen time and time again my attempts at doing mathematics on the fly on this show. You know, really, when it comes to taxes, I don't do brain surgery on my family, and I don't subject them to my lack of understanding of accounting. So, you know, if I got something, frankly, I don't know. I'm not a numbers guy.
Well, I shouldn't have done that.
I appreciate that. That's decent of you, Jeff.
That's not fair to put somebody on the spot. You know, like, it'd be like if you drive, say you drive a gas hog to work, and then you said something about gas prices, and me calling there and say, well, you drive a big gas hog.
Oh, I do own a big gas hog, Jeff.
That's not a debating tactic. You know what I mean?
Yeah, but you bring up an interesting point. I do own a big gas hog. I've got a great big old Dodge truck, and I can't tell you the last time I drove it.
Is it a full? Oh, you don't drive it.
I can't. Yeah, I'd have to go to the bank for a boat loan to drive it right now. I mean, there's a heaven knows, you know, with these snows we've had the last few nights.
Yeah.
I would absolutely love to have driven that thing to work and had the four-wheel drive going for me.
I'll tell you, one of the gas hogging vehicles I ever had was a Ford Explorer.
Oh, yeah. Well, the thing they did with that in many instances is they put two little engine in it.
It's a six-cylinder.
Yep.
And I have got a full-size truck with a V8 engine that I pull a boat with, and that truck pulling that boat gets about the same as that Explorer did, a six-cylinder.
Well, see, I mean, my Dodge, if I'm out on the interstate, now it's got a big old V8 in it, but it'll do, on a long trip. It'll
14, 15 miles a gallon.
Hell no, I've gotten 20 out of it.
Oh, that's pretty good.
You know, and that's that. 5.9 liter V8? It's not a Hemi.
Yeah.
But you know, on the interstate, I can get 20 miles a gallon out of it. But I have to go to the bank and humbly hold my hand out if I want to fill the tank these days.
I get 14 pulling my boat. I can get $50 in my truck.
Well, this thing's got a 37 gallon tank on it.
Man.
And I mean, I'm not kidding. From drop dead empty, that's an $85 fill up.
I was in Virginia Saturday, and gas was already $2.09 here,
mm-hmm.
and I got it down there for $1.80, 29 cents, $3 on 10 gallons. You could drive that truck down there and shop,
and
fill
just,
it up.
Yeah,
and you'd pay for your gas down there. You could drive down there for free.
Oh yeah,
well,
just about. But then again, we got to remember they're closer to the terminals.
Yeah, and Roanoke.
Yeah.
That is it.
We pay for that.
Let me throw one other thing, if I could.
Sure. Go ahead.
About the independence teacher thing.
Yeah.
Let's don't forget that that's an alleged incident. Because, see, I remember a few years back, we had a bunch of parents and kids down at Fairdale Elementary over some. Remember the teacher allegedly made the kids stay in the bathroom and do this and do that.
Right.
Remember, and then you remember how that got resolved?
No, I don't.
All the parents went down there and apologized to the teacher and said that they were wrong, that they overreacted, and that they were sorry, and said that it was entirely misrepresented and it was unfounded.
Well, what you were you listening last night, Jeff?
Oh, yeah.
What you heard was the individual who was in the classroom when it was said.
That's what he says.
I have since had it verified to me by other people who were in that classroom.
Oh, between yesterday and last night?
Between last night and today, yeah.
Well, this is an alleged event, because see, you know, I could.
Okay,
I could,
well, let's sure you could, but again, I have reason to believe it to be true.
Well,
And no reason to believe it to be false.
Well, it might probably most likely may probably over 50% a little bit probably.
And if it is true, is that the kind of thing you want your kid hearing?
Nope. Shouldn't even come up in high school. I don't know. It shouldn't even. We're there to educate and do book learning, not politicking.
Right. I tend to agree. And everything that I understand, it was said in class, as part of class. That's wrong.
Yeah, I agree. But just, in my mind, I just keep telling myself, this is just an alleged event. And I remember that Fairdale thing. That turned out to where all the parents apologized.
Mm-hmm. So. Well, I don't think this is. Okay. I mean, you can say alleged because it has not been proven in court. That's the only thing that alleged means.
Yeah.
But, if it walks like a duck and it quacks like a duck, generally, it's an Aflac commercial.
Well, there's a bunch of kids, if a teacher really said that and a bunch of kids goes and talks to the principal and, the whole class has its story together and everybody repeats the same words identical and there isn't anybody,
But what's spooky out of this is that there was as it was reported to us, there was some segment of the class that went, mm-hmm, good. There's some real good citizens coming up. Hey, well, Jeff, we got a roll. I got another call.
Well, I
appreciate your sentiment.
All right, man.
Later. And Gary. Hey, Gary, you're head on.
Hey, Bob, how you doing?
Yeah, I'm doing all right, I guess.
Hey, I don't think our fuel prices got anything to do with us not being close to the terminals.
Okay.
Just do a little bit of simple mathematics on it.
Well, I read the sticker on the pump every time. I mean, you're paying almost 45 cents a gallon, blah, 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 in taxes.
That's where most of it's at.
Well, okay.
And I think that there's a few distributors more or less kind of got a hammer lock on the distribution around here.
Well, and I think, I also think, and, get out your tinfoil helmet now, I think we are being conditioned. Do you remember the hue and cry, 9 months ago? I mean, we were ready to get the pitchforks and the torches and start marching because it was hitting $1.75 a gallon. Remember?
Yeah.
And now $1.75 a gallon looks like a day in the daisies.
Yeah, and I mean the long term projection. I mean, it might come down here and there, but the long term projection is up, up, up.
Well, sure, and you see, if it goes to $2.15 and then it bounces back down to $2, boy, we'll wipe the sweat off our brow then, won't we?
Yeah.
It's only $2 a gallon. I mean, I'm sorry. I heard it said, I think, on Dr. Bill's show the other day, and I thought it a rather cogent observation that you can watch gas prices go up and yet no gas truck arrive at the station.
Oh, yeah.
In other words, the gasoline that was $2 a gallon in the tank is the same gasoline that's now $2.09.
Yeah.
Now, under any other circumstance, Gary, we would be screaming and we would say, somebody's cheating us. Not here.
Well, I mean, that happens all the time. It really does.
Yeah.
But if you figure, say, like 200 miles down there to the terminals, say they charge $2 a mile to send a truck up here,
mm-hmm.
It's $400. Say they're sending 4,000 gallons at a time. At 8 pounds a gallon, that'd be about 32,000 pounds. That'd be about the payload they'd carry.
Yeah.
Or maybe a little more than that. Figures out to a penny per gallon transportation cost.
Wow.
That's all it is.
Well, I was a boy when the first gas crisis hit in, 73?
Uh-huh.
And we were told where I lived and it was the highest gas in the state of Alabama. And we were told, it's because you're the furthest from the terminal. And I guess I've sort of clung to that all along, but maybe that's another one that they throw out there just to make us what?
Well, I mean, they do that all the time, but most people in this world, for some reason or another, and I don't know why, can't do simple math.
Well,
it was my worst subject in school, but for some reason I seem to be able to do it, and people that should be able to do it, they can't seem to do it. Now, what I just explained to you was just simply simple math.
Sure was.
And it comes into use a lot of times in our life when we start having to figure out, when we're told something, we have to figure it out for ourselves.
Well, we're getting a big dose of the dumb down for starters.
Well, I think so, yeah.
I can do it in my head if I'm not trying to do anything else.
You know something? I had a thought.
I don't multitask on mathematics, Gary.
You know, we're always talking about these isms, like communism, fascism, you know, you name it, the isms.
Capitalism, corporatism.
Well, we're against all these isms. The thought occurred to me, we're not against these isms or these systems. What we're really against is a certain type and class of people that can use anything, any kind of ism, to marginalize their fellow man.
Absolutely.
So really, if you stop to think about it, a communist, I'm talking about a, you know, a real Bolshevik,
yeah,
really isn't any different than a laissez-faire capitalist.
The distance between the two, you probably couldn't slip a playing card between.
Yeah, I mean, they're both about, you know, running people down and enslaving them and taking their money away and all that. So really, we're not against these ism systems that we say we're against. It's not them, it's the people that are in them.
Yeah, I think the Russian word for it would have been the nomenklatura. That was the ruling class.
Yeah.
And here we just call them our betters.
Well, you know, I always think back to William the Conqueror, and you know how he stole England like that.
Sure.
It's the same process and system. I mean, they might have cleaned it up a little bit, and they might have changed the name of it, but
there's another. It's feudalism.
Well, it is feudalism. That would probably be one of the best ways you could term it. All these type of systems that try to keep people down.
Well, and yeah, and you know, it extends across social across lines throughout our culture. I look back at the public education that I got, and I got a very good public education, I feel like. But by the same token, you know, my graduating class had kids that in it that had the same teachers that I did that didn't get out of it what I got. And, you know, while I was learning to rebel and question authority, they were learning to sit down and shut up and pass the class.
Well, I've been told, and I don't know this for a fact, I mean, my graduation was back during the 70s, that if you graduated from high school in the 60s, you had what was the equivalent to about a two-year degree today.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe that was probably true.
No, I have no doubt. I just have so much respect for the education that my parents got graduating from high school in 1943. That's a college education. I mean, that, you know, the chemistry, the Latin, the physics, the biology, the mathematics, you know, the journalism.
Yeah.
Does it make any sense at all what I'm saying? Those people had college educations. And when they went to college, man, you really had an education. I had to go to college to get, in large part, the education my parents had in high school.
Yeah, and, you know, it's there are people who will tell you that, you remember Thomas Dewey?
Yeah.
He was behind all this. I don't know. I haven't really researched it enough, but it's definitely something that's happened in American education, and I think it's not only the educational system, but probably the popular culture itself, which is dumbing people down.
Well, every day I become a little bit more convinced that the single greatest nemesis our country faces is that black box in the corner of the room, the television.
Between that and the internet, I think we're about lost, aren't we?
Yeah, but see, what the thing is, for the most part, still with the internet, you have to actively engage. You can't be passive with it.
Yeah.
And the same thing applies to radio. You can't be passive. Yeah, I mean, you can do the dishes, whatever, you know, straighten up the living room with the radio on, but the television demands your entire devotion.
Yes,
and you have to focus on it, and you have to be utterly passive and let it do all the information delivery, and you do all the receiving.
Yeah.
And that makes television different from any other medium of expression.
Well, the sad thing about television is it could be used for some really, really good means.
Yeah, but of course it's been corporatized.
Oh, absolutely.
And it's you know, been governmentalized. You know, we can't on TV, you know, we can't see Janet Jackson's breast. But we can, however, see glowing propaganda accounts of what a sterling how you know, freedom and democracy are on the march in the Middle East. You know, and it's a howling lie.
Well, that's a political thing.
Well, yeah, of course it's a political thing.
I'm not talking that so much, because, I mean, we'd have our disagreements there to a certain extent.
Mm-hmm.
or when you get into political things. I mean, because it's just one viewpoint versus another, and I believe that that's a legitimate use for the media. But
propaganda?
What about the other things, but just the trash TV?
Eliminate.
Well,
I'm up late, and I'm flipping around, and there's Eliminate. Infomercials. The Home Shopping Network, QVC, God knows, the Trinity Broadcasting Network. But again, those are value judgments, too.
Well, they are, but I'm going more for like Jerry Springer and Mari Povich and plus all the really garbage entertainment shows. You know, I grew up on things like Andy Griffith and shows like that. And
I still stop on Andy Griffith. It's some of the greatest comedy that's ever happened in America.
Well, yeah, but, you know, you could turn the TV on back in the, you know, 60s and 70s and all that, and it just seemed like, you know, there's either a Western or there's just something on there that was entertaining, was pretty clean.
Well, you know, in a way, Gary, you bring up something very interesting because my dad, I have, you know, this running, you know, he's 80. Yeah. God knows he's earned the right to watch as much television as he wants.
Ask him if he likes Charles Boyer and David Niven.
Oh, that goes without saying. Then, you know, Bonanza. And you know, he's got a schedule. You know, it's something like Murder, She Wrote, followed by The Rockford Files. Then there's something else, and then there's Bonanza. And I keep looking at, Dad, do you ever watch anything that's been made in the last 30 years? No, why?
You know. Well, you know, your dad and I agree on that.
Yeah.
I mean, in fact, I haven't watched TV for a long, long time.
But he's very much like I am. I mean, he's got his TV land thing going. But by the same token, it's just as likely to be on the History Channel.
Yeah, well, that's worthwhile.
Some of it. But still, there is still what you have to do in order to get the programming, and that is completely shut down.
Uh-huh.
You can't interact with it. You have to be an absolutely passive receptor.
Well,
because it involves not only your eyes but your ears.
We're losing our ability to read good books.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think there's anything to that?
No, I think there's everything to that. I think it changes the way literature is written. I'm talking from an English major standpoint, Gary. Sit down and try to read Dickens. You know?
Yeah.
The guy will spend 5 pages on the nature of a leaf. And you know, here I am, you know, little space age generation guy. Dickens drives me nuts. On the other hand, I can sit and read Mark Twain all day long. But I think there is the ability to comprehend a whole book.
Try reading Gibbon and Macaulay, Churchill's favorite book.
Yeah, I've been down that road.
It's pretty dry.
I mean, you know, you're dying for somebody to cook a meal or, you know, stab something or do something, but you know, no, then therefore came there. Yeah, it's a tough read.
Yeah, very tough. I didn't get very far.
The rise and fall of the attention span of Bob Kincaid. You know, that's what I retired with. Hey, Gary, we got to roll.
Nice talk to you, Bob.
Later. Okay, time for our top of the hour news. Man, this is flying by tonight. This is News Talk 620 WWNR. This is Head On. I'm going to go read something. I'm Bob Kincaid.
Head On.
Proud of over 50 years of broadcasting history.
You can depend on us.
News Talk 620, WWNR, Beckley. It's 9 o'clock.
Hi, I'm Bob Vila. Protect yourself from tetanus in your garden and diphtheria, another possibly fatal infection. Get your vaccination every 10 years. If it's been 10, do it again. To learn more, visit www.nfid.org.
News Talk 620 WWNR, keeping you informed with Southern West Virginia's most accurate and dependable forecast.
Here is your forecast from the Weather Channel. Another front moving in for tonight, so a 1 in 2 chance of light snow showers and flurries expected. Low around 30 early Friday. We'll climb out of that into the low and mid-30s, so kind of a raw afternoon with a 6 in 10 likelihood that the snow showers will persist throughout the day. Tomorrow night, 1 to 2 additional inches, and we'll hold in a slight chance of snow showers on Saturday. Pretty raw again, with a high only in the mid-20s, and look for increased sun by the end of the weekend. High Sunday, around 32.
Knowledge is power. News Talk 620, WWNR. Back to radio for the rest of us. Head on.
Welcome back. I'm Bob. This is Head On. The phone number is 252-6200. Outside Beckley, it's 800-620-9967. I mentioned this, around 8:30 or so. A study released on Thursday, that would be today, oddly enough, cast doubt on whether recent tort reform in Texas that limited payouts in medical malpractice lawsuits and is similar to what President Bush wants nationally, first day with the rented lips, was really needed. The study examined Texas Department of Insurance records dating back to 1988 and found claims that medical costs were soaring because of too many malpractice lawsuits were not true. Here's a quote from the study. "We find no evidence of the medical malpractice crisis that produced headlines over the last several years and led to the so-called legal reform in Texas and other states." Guess what happened to you? Because they did it to us here, too. The insurance industry ran out screaming and crying and pleading and begging and moaning and groaning that they were going out of business because of those mean, nasty lawyers and, what's more, those mean, nasty, butchered people. And they did it to us again. Insurance companies lie and lie and lie and lie and lie. And for the life of them, for the life of me, I don't know why we believe it. They're doing it again on third-party bad faith. Last year, I tell you again, last year, there were 128 third-party bad faith lawsuits filed in this state. That's just filed. The number of them that were that went on to become a verdict is probably 1% of that number. All right? When the insurance companies are crying about not being able to do business, and when the insurance companies are crying about the mean, nasty victims, ask yourself, if they're going broke, why are they paying multi-million dollar salaries to their CEOs? Ask yourself, if they are sincere about this, why will they not open their accounting books to us and let an independent examiner audit them and show us whether it's true or not? Because that's what happened. This study was independent. Here's another quote. "Everyone who is collecting data is finding more or less the same thing. There is no evidence of a tort crisis." See, these people say it nicely. I'll tell you straight up and head on. You're being lied to. I don't know how many senators I called today. Well, I can tell you I didn't waste any time calling Republicans. They're in the insurance company's pocket anyway. Just like the Republicans in the United States Senate are in the pockets of the credit card company. So, you know, there was no point in calling Senator Weeks-minded. He doesn't give a tinker's damn what the insurance companies do to consumers around here because, well, he's not there to support you. He's there to support business. Okay? You got that? You understand? But I did call and leave a message, for instance, with one senator, and I said, you got to understand, with the bankruptcy bill that just went through, what's going to happen when we eliminate third-party bad faith is we are going to prevent average West Virginians from being able to pay their medical bills, and it's only going to contribute to the real medical crisis. Because I don't know if you realize this or not, but if you get rear-ended, if you're in an auto wreck and you've got medical bills and you try to put it on your regular health insurance, your regular health insurance will tell you to go pound sand, that they don't have to pay it because it's part of a car wreck and there's insurance involved. Okay? This is a con job of monstrous proportions. And if you care about your rights, if you care about your neighbor,
If you care about your neighbor, don't take his way. Don't take away his rights. You better be calling some senators and telling them that you damned well appreciate and cherish your constitutional rights. Because, you know, the Constitution of this state says the courts of the state of West Virginia shall be open to all persons. If you can't sue an insurance company, they've just closed the courthouse door. Figure it out. You're being conned. Question is, are you going to smile while they're conning you, or are you going to get mad and do something about it? Let's go to the phones. Matt's with us. Hey, Matt, you're head on. Matt.
Yeah, Bob.
Yeah, what's up?
Oh, not much. Just driving home, heard the, I think it was the last caller on the fuel thing.
Yeah, Gary.
Yeah. When he done his math, he left out a few key things.
Okay, what's that?
Well, labor, insurance, and taxes. Because, you know, when you figure all them in,
mm-hmm.
it does raise the price a lot more than a penny a mile.
Okay, but you could raise the price a lot more than a penny a mile and still not account for a lot of what we deal with in our fuel pricing structure.
Oh, I'm not here to argue. I mean,
I understand.
The fuel price, it's greed and gouging from the bottom up to the top and top down to the bottom.
And I mean, do you disagree with me? I mean, what I said about the gasoline that's in the tanks at the station. You know, the gasoline that's in the tanks at the station.
Mm-hmm.
Assume that a fuel truck has not delivered a load. And yet it goes from $2 to $2.09 for the same gas.
Right. Well, that's wrong.
Well, it smells
yeah,
like...
I mean, the stars must be in alignment or something's wrong the end of time because I'm agreeing with you, but...
Yeah. Well, I mean, look, you know, you can hate my politics, but I'm just trying to point out when we're getting conned.
Well, I mean, I agree. I agree 100% because, I mean, and the thing about being so far away from the refinery,
mm-hmm.
I mean, I travel the state quite a bit. Or not quite as much I used to, but I've been to little stations up in the middle of nowhere. I mean, in Ufu, Egypt.
Mm-hmm.
And their gas price is 10, 15 cents cheaper than Beckley. I mean, the people in Beckley do have... A lot of the fuel that comes in Beckley comes from two or three different vendors.
Right.
I mean, every gas station you see comes from one or two or maybe three people. And they do have a lock on it here in the Beckley area.
And, you know, I mean, it's kind of interesting, Matt, because you can see it here. You can see it in Charleston, too. You know, the gas station worker goes out to flip the number on the sign outside. And, you know, two blocks up, the minute that happens, the next guy at the next station is going out doing it to his.
Well, that's true. But I do know people that have worked in, like, convenience stores and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
And when the person that you're buying your fuel from comes, you know, when he calls down and says, you got to raise your price. And like I said, when all the gas is coming from the same people anyway, the reason, you know, one reason might be if one guy raises his, you know, it's coming from the same guy, he's got to raise his on up the street.
Right. And what I fail to understand, and it's possible it could just be a failure of understanding on our part. It smells like a con, but it could just be a lack of understanding.
Well,
when the tanker truck has come and it has pumped everything into the ground, you're billed for what just got delivered, correct? Is that the way you understand it?
Well, it kind of works that way by what I've been told. Now, I haven't been into it personally, but by what I've been told, that's kind of how it works, but you got it. I don't know.
Is there any business where we would buy something from someone and then let them come back to us a week and a half later and say, you owe me more money?
Actually, there are a few businesses like that in the computer side of it.
Well, okay, I can see that. But if you sell me X number of gallons of gasoline for my gas station
mm-hmm.
at Y price, and, you know, we've got an agreement, you're paid for it, there's no way in heaven or earth that you can come back and tell me, you know, you owe me more money.
Well, that's true, but...
And yet somehow or another, we still manage to raise the prices on the gasoline.
Right, right. Well, it's just like me. I drive a diesel.
Mm-hmm.
And when I can take and fuel up beside the same pump, and people that have timber companies and things like that can fuel up for 50 cents less, with a 6% sales tax, something's wrong.
Yeah, because they get a break.
Yeah. Timber and construction and mining and anything,
yeah,
off-road.
Just kind of makes you wonder.
Farming.
Yeah, just kind of makes you wonder why it is they're better than you or me.
Well, now, they do say that the diesel has a higher sulfur content, but other than that, you know.
Yeah. But
there's not that much price difference, and if it's, you know, got a higher sulfur content, you would think it would put out more black smoke, because they tell me that one reason why they charge more for the diesel is because of the on-road diesels, because, you know, the pollution and the damage to the road. But, you know, I think the higher sulfur diesel would put out more pollution.
Well, I think you're a smart guy for having a diesel, though, because there's going to come a time, it's already happening all over the rest of the country, naturally we're, you know, chasing the pack, when you can, you know, you can feel good about filling up your vehicle because you can fill it up with stuff and say, hey, look, I'm not contributing to America's dependence on foreign oil.
Well,
that day's coming.
Well, that's true, but it's a long way away. By that time, I'm, you know, I don't think I'll have to worry about my diesel.
Well, actually, it's not as far away as you think. They're already selling it in the Midwest.
Well, I know, but it's very sparse. You're talking about the biodiesel.
Well, biodiesel or the hybrid mixes. There are kits you can use to convert to kerosene.
Well, but why would you want to go to kerosene?
Again, it's
kerosene,
right,
higher than diesel is.
Right, I understand that. But what I'm getting at, though, is there are a number of different ways that you can fuel a diesel vehicle, and, you know, as compared with a gasoline engine, you know, you're locked in.
Well, no, not necessarily. You can take and convert your gasoline to propane, and that's American.
Yeah, but it's still a fossil fuel, and it's still a finite resource.
Well, that's true, but everything else is a fossil. I mean, in all honesty, let's just be real here. Everything you do besides, I guess, solar would be a fossil fuel.
Well, there's a fossil fuel somewhere in the process.
Right.
I mean, somebody's driving a combine to harvest the flax seeds.
Right.
That's
why I'm saying everything's
got
to be a renewable source or a fossil fuel of some kind.
But, and again, that's another one of our problems, Matt. The technology's there. The solution is reachable. And yet we have no national will on the part of our government to reach it.
Well, that's true, but it's always been that way. I mean, you just can't blame that on the Bush administration.
Now, see, I got to take issue with you, Matt. That's not true. We have had national policies in relation to fuel crises and energy wasting. I well remember a time when you got a huge break if you built a home with solar in it. That was repealed by the Republicans.
But
I remember.
The thing is, solar is not, there's not enough technology in solar to make it worth it. I'd love to go to solar. I have two places in Hinton, and, you know, it costs me over $10,000 a year to heat and supply them with power. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But, and, well, and insurance, too. But the thing is, you know, by the time you try to put solar in, yeah, I can get a tax break and things like that, but the technology ain't there yet.
Well,
That I can find. I mean, I've...
No, it really is. I'm not pulling your leg. I mean, you can... I mean, I don't know how big a structure you're talking about. You can build a home and heat it entirely on solar.
Well, it's, oh yeah, I know you can.
And
I mean,
you know, and
if you want to put enough solar panels in,
right?
But the thing is, by the time you put enough solar panels in, you have no yard or anything left.
No. You can do it. You can do it simply, strictly with roof space. That's the truth.
Who wants big solar panels on top of the roof?
Well, no, they're integrated into the roof line, Matt.
Well, actually, they have shingles made as
That's what I'm saying. You know, we're not talking about great big glass mirrors necessarily.
Right. They actually do have the shingles made as solar panels now.
Yeah, as collectors, and they can go to a boiler system. It can also go to a DC battery.
Right.
And you know, I'd love to be able to build that house tomorrow. And you know, the simple joy of never writing a check to AEP again.
But you gotta look how long it takes you pay it off. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah, it's not gonna change the amortization of the note, not by any dramatic amount of money. I mean, consider the difference in building a house of shingles versus a house made of brick. It's probably it's on a similar par with that.
I don't know. It'd take you an awful long time to pay off a $10,000-$15,000 investment just by your heating bill. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, yeah. But the thing is, it would. And again, we're talking about a little bit of moral or you know, whatever satisfaction you want to describe it as. Again, not writing that check to AEP. You know.
Oh yeah.
Not paying those excise taxes. You know, your side is really fond of not paying taxes. There's a great way to never pay them.
Well, that's true, but think about it this way too. If you have one breakdown on that system, say if you put in a $10,000 system, it breaks down 2 years later, costs you another $3,000. You went $3,000 backwards. So it's a gamble. You know what I'm saying? Yes, you
it depends on the technology you use. Most of this stuff is fairly passive. I mean, there's not a lot of moving parts.
Well, that's
not
true,
there's not a lot to break down.
You have converters and batteries only last for, you know, what are they saying, 5-6 years?
Yeah.
So, and, you know, batteries aren't cheap. So.
No, they're not. But
and then you got to pollute to make the lead batteries.
Well, there's some of that you're going to have to deal with one way or another.
Well,
there's no getting around
it. I'm just playing, I guess, devil's advocate there. I mean, I guess you can't have it both ways or have everything. But one other thing I got to say I agree with you on, and this is scary, but they are conditioning us.
How can you think anything otherwise?
But it's both sides. It ain't just one side. It's both sides doing it.
Well, I mean, where the fuel's concerned, I don't think there's any side to it.
No, it's both sides on the fuel. Everybody's making money off of it.
You know, I would feel so good if I could pay $1.89 a gallon for fuel again.
All right. Well, and me and my wife were talking about the same thing. You know, I remember a time we used to fill our car up for when we first got married. We filled it up for I think it was 89 cents.
Yep. You've apparently been married about the same amount of time as I have because I remember that very well.
And you know. And now the thing is, if we get back down, they're conditioning us to get us back down to where we think, like you said, $1.75 is cheap.
Yeah.
So, you know, I guess the planets are in line or something. It's a scary thought, but I had to agree with you. Twice.
Well, you know, don't let it get you down. You know, don't make anybody take away your belt and shoelaces or anything, okay, man?
Oh, I'm not worried about it.
Thanks a lot, man. Take care. Bye now. All right, Jim. Hey, Jim. Yo, Jim.
Bob?
Yeah.
I just got a question for you.
Yes, sir.
What does the term social Darwinism mean to you?
Oh, Lord. this is a bad time to give me an exam, man. It's hard to segue that way.
I'll give you an exam, but I want you to think about that term and perhaps at another show get back to me on it, okay?
Sure. Sure. I'm sitting. The wheels are turned. The smoke's blowing out of my ears right now. I mean, what's your angle, Jim?
No angle. Social Darwinism means the survival of the fittest.
Well, social Darwinism, as I recall, or as I remember it, is usually mentioned in fairly negative terms.
Well,
because there's natural Darwinism, which is, you know, true jungle survival of the fittest, and, you know, the little bird has this kind of beak because it eats seeds, blah, 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 blah. Social Darwinism is a different animal.
Well, I want you to think about that because, you know, it definitely relates on some of the isms that you and Gary were talking about. And by the way, I have to go now, but anyway, Gary is very well spoken, and I enjoy hearing him.
Okay, well, thank you.
I don't agree with what you two were saying about Bolshevism and capitalism. However,
well, if you look at it in the end result, in both instances, Jim, you have a very poor class, and they tend to be abused.
Well, I would like to think of three words: an aristocracy of merit. Thank you, Bob.
All right, later, Jim. I just got done reading a piece by I got this big thick Truman Capote book, and I'd never seen or heard of it before. It's a piece called "The Muses Are Heard." And it comes from, and the story is a description of his attendance upon a cultural exchange trip between of the Broadway production of Porgy and Bess in 1955, 56, something like that, to the Soviet Union. And Capote was a pretty good reporter. Never mind what you think of his social life or anything. He was a pretty good reporter. And what he describes is, and you can compare it with his other writings, and that's where I got what I said to Jim. In either instance, you wind up with an oppressed underclass. And so some of what Gary was saying, pick your ism. You know, it must always be remembered that Hitler, we call him the Nazis, but we forget that it was National Socialism. And yet there they were right next door to the Union of Soviet Socialist Republics. They both called themselves socialists. One of them wasn't, or both of them weren't, or one of them was. But in either instance, there was a miserable underclass. And in capitalism, there's a miserable underclass. And you begin, and in every instance, there is a group, and you know, it's not a bad idea. Jim mentions a meritocracy, an aristocracy of merit, as opposed to something that comes by blood or birth or heredity or, well, you see what I'm saying. Let's go to Stan. No, we lost Stan. Well, I don't think we've lost him. I think Stan probably still knows where he is. But if you want to try back after the top of the, after the bottom of the hour, that'll be fine. I was trying to get him on before the break, just to keep him from having to wait. But at any rate, we do have to take our bottom of the hour break. This is News Talk 620 WWNR. This is Head On. I'm Bob Kincaid.
Good evening, this is Carl Mack, WWNR News. The Rodell police officer charged with domestic battery and brandishing a weapon yesterday is still on the job, despite earlier statements made by the town's mayor. Josephine Cox had said that Daniel Ray Price had been fired from the force after his arrest by Beckley police on Tuesday, but now the mayor says she cannot dismiss Price until his case goes to court. She says if he's found guilty, Price will then be discharged. Until then, Price is on administrative leave without pay. Police say the charges stem from complaints made against Price last month that involved the mother of his child, including one incident that occurred at Raleigh General Hospital while Price was in uniform. A part-time math teacher at West Virginia University Parkersburg branch has been charged with two counts of murder in the deaths of a couple whose charred remains were pulled from a burned apartment building last month. Parkersburg Police Chief Bob Newell describes 33-year-old Drew Spencer from Parkersburg as a neighbor and acquaintance of the two victims, but declined to say what led investigators to the suspect. The causes of death for 31-year-old John Nestor III and his girlfriend, 31-year-old Tracy Thompson, have not yet been released. Neither has the cause of the fire, although Neville says he thinks Spencer set the fire. The Senate has unanimously passed a bill that would require humane officers and law enforcement officials to exchange notes on possible signs of domestic violence and animal cruelty. The bill passed yesterday would further require humane officers to relay evidence of a child abuse and neglect found while responding to animal cruelty calls. Senator John Yoder, a Republican representing Jefferson County, says studies show a distinct correlation between animal cruelty and violence toward humans. That's the news. Now here's the forecast. Watch out for more snow beginning tonight. This evening, increasing cloudiness, chance of some snow showers. More likely chance, though, late tonight, with not much accumulation expected, and not as cold tonight either, low near 30. But then for Friday, snow showers in the morning. That becomes snow and rain mixed by afternoon. Snow could accumulate 1 inch, with tomorrow's high in the upper 30s. For News Talk 620, this is Carl Mack, when you need to know.
There are three things you get at L&S Toyota. Great prices, big selection,
no hassles. Now here's the specials of the week. L&S Toyota has brand new 2005 Corollas, over 35 to choose for as low as $13,818, including a $500 factory rebate. Buy a brand new 2005 Camry, over 25 to choose for as low as $17,585, including a $750 factory rebate. Plus, buy Toyota certified pre-owned vehicles with 3.99 APR financing for 48 months, a 6-year, 100,000-mile limited warranty, roadside assistance, and a 160-point quality assurance inspection. The specials of the week at L&S Toyota, 300 Rural Acres Drive in Beckley. 05 Corollas, $13,818. 05 Camry, $17,585. Offers on select models with approved credit. Prices plus tax, tag, and registration fees. Dealer retains rebates and incentives. Example, 2001 Solara, $270 per month for 48 months at 3.99% financing with zero down. Offer ends 3/31/05.
Ladies, the clock has been reset and the slate is wiped clean. Is this the year you find true love? Because if you really want to find, you've got to be willing to seek. And the best place to start your search is Cupid.com. Even if you don't know exactly what you're looking for, Cupid's Auto Match helps you find guys with your favorite traits and qualities. Basic memberships are free with zero obligations. You can even reply to messages from Gold members, a service you usually pay for at other sites. But the greatest thing about Cupid.com is their local focus. They bring you together with people who live close by, people who can actually be there for you. All you've got to do is go to Cupid.com and browse their pictures and personals with complete anonymity. Whether it's online or at one of their fun local events, when Cupid.com helps you seek, true love is what you find.
Cupid.com. Advertising locally on great radio stations to bring people together for love.
Welcome to the John Deere Lawn Care Show, Green and Growing. Today we're here with Bill Clutho, John Deere's groundskeeping guru. Bill, when it comes to lawn care in the winter, it never seems like there's enough I can do to fill my time. Got any ideas for a winter weather project?
It can be tough to find ways to stay busy during the winter, but John Deere suggests getting involved in your local area's environment.
That sounds like a good idea, but where would I start?
Well, many communities offer programs like stream cleanups that help beautify local waterways. And these activities make for great family and school projects. Adopting a stream not only brings people together, but also works to preserve and protect one of our greatest natural resources. So find out what programs are available in your area and get your feet wet, Diane.
Thanks, Bill. I'll check into some opportunities today, as long as I have a nice toasty fireplace to come home to. Tune in next time to Green and Growing for more tips from John Deere.
WWNR Beckley.
Radio for the real majority. Head on.
I apologize. I guess I lost a round on Stump the Host. Honest to God, how many of you went and looked up social Darwinism?
I did.
You know, I read 6 or 10 articles really, really quickly. You never knew you could do that whole Evelyn Wood thing on a computer screen, you know, where you hold your finger there and scan it back and forth. You can. Now I'm struggling to figure out what the point was. Because you heard me say it, social Darwinism is something creepy, and it is. Spencer, a guy named Spencer, came up with it in the 1880s in England. Didn't really get hold, but it gained real popularity in, you know, the Old South. The idea that Darwinism can be applied to cultures and races, and that some races are more fit than others. Social Darwinism, you know, gives you it's the shortcut to Auschwitz. To put it bluntly, so you know, there it is. Still, like I said, I'm still struggling to come up with the explanation for its relevance to the conversation. But you know, like I said, you know, you guys bring it to the table. I'll do my best to play with it. You guys want to drive the bus for a little while? That's fine. You know, I'll do my best to ride along. Going back to the tort reform thing, this, and understand, I really don't see this. Although it has, of course, been polarized in in the country as a Republican versus Democrat issue. I don't see it that way, this tort reform nonsense. Because I am very proud of what was guaranteed to us in the Constitution, among which are the right to a trial by jury. And the right to take, you know, because there's a certain elitism in saying, well, you know, someone else knows better how to hear your case. Nine times out of ten, if you hand a case to a jury, and I don't care what the educational level, nine times out of ten, they'll come down the right way. Because when you hand a case to a jury, you're handing a case to your fellows. And for the most part, they can see through the blue smoke and mirrors, and they can understand the right and the wrongness of it. So, like I said, I don't see it as being a political issue, although it's been made one. And you know, remember who made it one. We were cruising along with a perfectly adequate legal system until a bunch of Republicans did come in and start saying, oh, you know, the insurance companies are having to pay out too much money. For my part, I've never seen a day that an insurance company had to pay out too much money. And I say that because, if you could sodium pentothal up an insurance executive, he would tell you, when he had no choice but to tell the truth, that there was never a day when he felt like his insurance company took in too much money. So if there's no such thing as taking in too much money, there is darn sure no such thing as paying out too much money. But this creature was created by a bunch of Republican donors, to wit, the insurance industry, and it was done so that they could have more money and take more money from you. The whole goal here, it's a Ponzi scheme. It's three-card Monte in the New York subway. The goal here is to take in money and never have to pay it out. And that's what they're talking about with tort reform. You know, thanks to what the West Virginia legislature did to us a couple of years ago, it doesn't matter how much you suffer. It doesn't matter how great your agony. It doesn't matter a whit. The West Virginia legislature, because it was conned, pure and simple, conned by the insurance industry, said, I don't care if your entire existence is like looking out a picture window into hell. You've got so much pain. I don't care. You can't have more than this amount of money for your suffering. Anybody ever had an earache? Anybody ever had a toothache? I had a toothache once, went to the dentist and said, you know, look, I hate to complain and be a real crybaby or anything, but I got to have something for this. This hurts, man. And he looked at me and he said, you've been to the mountain. He said, you understand that a toothache is among the worst pain a human being can ever have. I said, well, I didn't know, but I believe it. I was afraid I was being a real ninny about things. He said, no, these things hurt. And take that toothache. And, you know, something like that or an earache will make you roll up in a ball on the bed and cry. Take that and imagine that somebody did that to you, caused that pain. Are you entitled to some form of relief? Are you in? Well, not. Some of you don't care. For some of you, it simply doesn't matter what your neighbors suffer. For me, it does. So we know now, because of this study that has come out, that the medical malpractice so-called crisis is a great big bunch of hooey. And we can extrapolate from that this third-party bad faith insurance crisis, this crisis that yielded 128 lawsuits in the entire state of West Virginia last year. I mean, think of it. Divide 128 by the number of counties in this state. That's a little more than two per county. I can almost guarantee you that there were more suits filed by corporations against individuals in those counties than two per county in that year. and yet this is a crisis. And over this made-up crisis, they want you to give up your constitutional rights? Now, maybe you think I'm just beating on this too much, but I want to understand. Because from the time I was a little tiny fella, you know, getting those lessons in citizenship that my mother and father gave me as they raised me in our traditional American family values home, I was told to cherish my rights as a human being and as an American. And yet suddenly those rights aren't any good anymore? Suddenly those rights are less important than the bottom line of some insurance company? I have a hard time stomaching that. I have a hard time suspending my my disbelief to believe that because I have the right to sue an insurance company that does me harm, that somehow I'm endangering the vast megalith that is insurance in West Virginia and the rest of the country. I can't make it work. The phone number is 252-6200. Outside Beckley, it's 800-620-9967. Got a couple of lines open if you want to try to get in before the end of the evening. Wayne's with us. Hey, Wayne, your head on.
Hey, buddy, how you doing?
What's happening?
Oh, same old thing. I'm thinking about that bankruptcy.
Yeah.
And you know what the most amazing thing to me about the bankruptcy bill and, you know, tort reform and third-party bad faith and all that is the people that support it. And I'm not talking about legislators. I'm talking about the common
sit
working,
down,
you know.
Yeah, the sit-down-to-Sunday-dinner crowd.
Yeah, I mean, that is so confusing. I mean, you know, like the bankruptcy thing is, you know, people ought to be responsible, blah, blah, blah. And the people that are taking the stand are people that, well, on a moment's notice, could be in a situation where it'd be really good if they could file bankruptcy and try to start over.
Well, yeah, and
because of a medical emergency or a...
Yeah. I think I've got the same one. Orrin Hatch, Republican, Utah. I mean, I don't know why he didn't...
A real
just,
prince among men.
Yeah, I don't know why these words didn't just hang in his throat like a bone. The short answer is fairness, declared Orrin Hatch. Those who can pay their bills should pay their bills. That's the American way. Huh? What? The American way is defined by debtorism?
Well, exactly. And, you know, I wonder, okay, now, effectively, you can't go bankrupt.
No, you can't.
You can't go bankrupt. So what do they do when you get in a position where you can't pay anybody anything? Do you go up for sale?
Well, they have not established debtor's prison yet.
Well, no, you can't have a prison. You'd have to house people. You'd just sell them to somebody.
No, but we could privatize it, Wayne.
Yeah. No, the prison. Yeah, well, yeah. That's true, too.
But no, seriously, in all honesty... You know, we've talked about how bad things can turn out to be good things.
Yeah.
You know, how George Bush could turn out to be the best thing that ever happened to the American labor movement.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, this may be another example of it.
Well, I know. I'm getting tired of these examples.
Yeah, I know.
There's too many of them, Bob.
Yeah, I know.
These examples. I'm serious.
We will make an example.
Too many,
we will make an example of you.
But, I have... faith that you're right. I just...
No, what I'm saying here is if I can't pay my bills, and we're going to assume for a minute that I'm a, you know, just a good guy. I didn't go around kiting credit cards. Maybe I've got a whole bunch of medical bills. I can't pay them. Okay. Ordinarily, I would have gone into bankruptcy court, and I would have Chapter 7'd them, gotten a fresh start. And a little bit of forgiveness for the fact that a catastrophic illness struck my family that I had no control over. Okay,
right.
That's what Chapter 7 did. Yep. Doesn't do that anymore.
Oh, I know.
So I can't pay my bills. I can't pay bankruptcy. What do? I don't pay them. And I don't declare bankruptcy. My credit gets ruined. And guess what? I can't do. I can't get credit. I can't participate in the economy. I can't buy the new TV. I can't buy the new refrigerator.
No, no, but you know what they're going to do there. I mean, so then they'll just create a big black market.
Well, not just that, but the other thing they can't do yet is compel me to file bankruptcy. In other words, we've talked about militancy a little bit. Maybe this is another form of that militancy. They don't want us, they don't want us erasing our debts. Fine, we'll keep the debts. We just won't pay them. They can't take you to debtor's prison yet. Do you see the point I'm making?
Yet is the magic word. I mean, hell, that might be coming next week.
Well, you know, you give the likes of Tom DeLay and then Bill Frist a chance, and it will.
Well, it seems to be affecting the other side. I mean, you know, the Kool-Aid, I think they're slipping that into, you know, places where they don't expect it. You said that the credit card bill passed because of over 60 votes.
Well, the credit card bill.
Out of the Senate.
Well, they closed debate on it as a result of that vote. Yeah.
Right.
That cloture vote.
Right. But you said there were 14 Democrats.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, there are 55 Republicans, and am I not correct?
Yes, you are. Okay. They needed five.
All they needed was six.
Yeah.
Well, five. Well, 60 does it, right?
Yeah, 60.
They needed five.
Yeah, 60 is a magic number.
Yeah, well, who are the other 14? I mean, I'm not real happy with Byrd, but who's, you know, Biden? You said Biden.
Yeah, this Jeff Bingaman out of New Mexico.
It really doesn't matter.
No, it doesn't.
You know, my point is, holy, you know, that's disgusting. I can't understand.
Well, yeah, and let's compare that with something, Wayne. We had a little good news out of the Senate today.
Oh, really? Let me hear that.
George
United States Senate?
Yeah, that Senate. Okay. The George Bush Clear Skies Initiative.
Yeah.
That Orwellian bill, it died in committee today because there was a 9-9 vote. So it's deadlocked, so it's dead. And and that committee, I forget which one, of course there's a Republican majority on it because they are, you know, they get to have one more vote than the rest of us. So I guess there were like 10 Republicans and 8 whatever Democrats. It tied on a 9-9 vote. And of those 9 who voted against letting it out of committee, lo and behold, Lincoln Chafee from Rhode Island, a Republican, came over. And Jim Jeffords, who is an independent from Vermont, voted with the Democrats. So it died. Now, we had to move heaven and earth to get one Republican to come over. On the other hand, if the Republicans need the help of the Democrats, you need 5? We got 14. Do you see the distinction there?
It makes me mad.
Yeah.
Yeah, I do see the distinction.
You know, we almost engaged in wholesale polluting of America's air, but for the vote of one Republican. And we had to struggle to get that. On the other hand, the Republicans need 5. Don't worry about it. We got 14.
14. Yeah. Well, yeah. You know, it just means we got more rats than the other side.
Yeah, but how do you? I desperately would like to have an explanation from Senator Byrd's office why he did this, especially after voting.
Well, I don't know. As far as I, you know, that doesn't really matter to me. There's no explanation. I don't understand it. I do, you know, I mean, I could, you know, continue to watch and may choose at some time to give you a pass or something, but I don't really need your explanation because whatever it is, I'm against it.
Yeah, it's done.
How can you vote for it? I mean, you know, I'm sorry.
Yeah, well,
there's no explanation that's
sufficient.
Exactly.
You know,
you took the words right out of my mouth, Bob.
Yeah, you're right. Going back to what you said when we first started talking. Look at the people who support this stuff. I mean, we had a call last night, and I didn't goon on him. He's a friend of the show. But he said, you know, I've been through bankruptcy. And I said, and it helped you then, didn't it? Yes, it did. And the next logical thing to say was, it helped you then, but whoever's needing it now, you know, you've had your help. To heck with them.
Yeah, exactly. Who is that Kevin?
No, that was Brian.
Brian, that's the electrician guy, right?
I think so, yeah.
I would like to talk to him.
Okay.
If he's listening, I would like to talk to you.
Okay.
You know, I mean, he's just well.
But I mean, do you see what I'm saying about that? If it's sauce for the goose, it's sauce for the gander.
Oh yeah, I do.
And
yeah.
if we recognize that most of the bankruptcies now are taking place as a function of, you know,
medical.
Yeah,
bills or.
I mean, you can
life-changing events. It doesn't matter. I mean, that shouldn't happen. See, this is, you know, everybody wants to tell everybody, and we all think that this is the greatest country, blah, 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 all that jazz. Well, in the greatest country, that should not be a concern.
The greatest country.
If you get in an accident or if you become gravely ill, you're taken care of, and we'll pay the bill. You know what I mean?
Yeah, the greatest country in the world does not do that to its most desperate citizens.
No, it doesn't, and that's what this country is starting to do.
But, I mean, the final vote, Wayne, the final vote on this damnable bill, I've got it right here. John dug it up for me. You know, here on the final vote on the bankruptcy bill, let's do a little roll call of the decent people.
Okay.
I mean, I think we owe this to them. Don't you?
Yes, I do.
When it came time to stand up and be counted, these are the people who stood up with the middle class. Wyden, Democrat, Oregon; Schumer, Democrat, New York; Sarbanes, Democrat, Maryland; Rockefeller, Democrat, West Virginia; Reed, Democrat, Rhode Island; Obama, Democrat, Illinois; Murray, Democrat, Washington; Mikulski, Democrat, Maryland; Lieberman. There's a shock. I was wrong about him.
Oh, all right.
Lieberman stood up to be counted.
That's got to be a mistake, but we'll talk about that.
Carl Levin, Democrat, Michigan. Leahy, Democrat, Vermont. Lautenberg, Democrat, New Jersey. Kerry, Democrat, Massachusetts. Kennedy, Democrat, Massachusetts. Tom Harkin, one of my favorite guys in the Senate.
Yeah, Tom Harkin's a good
one. Dianne Feinstein, Democrat, California. Russ Feingold. Dick Durbin, Byron Dorgan, Christopher Dodd, Mark Dayton, John Corzine, Cantwell, whose first name I can't remember, Barbara Boxer, and Senator Akaka from Hawaii. Now, on the other hand, Evan Bayh. I've heard he has presidential aspirations. Max Baucus, Montana. Joe Biden. Jeff Bingaman.
Joe Biden. Well, Joe Biden got a hang.
You know, and I circled this with my pen, Wayne. Bird.
Oh, I know. That's.
Carper, a Democrat from Delaware. Conrad, Democrat from North Dakota. Mary Landrieu, Democrat from Louisiana.
Oh, she won that real close race there.
Yeah. Lincoln, Arkansas, Democrat. Jim Jeffords voted for this bill.
Oh, that's a shock.
Daniel Inouye. Daniel Inouye. Yeah, the senator from Hawaii voted for it.
How old is he? I didn't realize he was still.
I imagine he's got to be close to 80, if not over.
Yeah.
Nelson of Florida and Nelson of Nebraska, both Democrats, voted for it. Pryor of Arkansas, Democrat, voted for it. This one just hangs in my gut like a rock in the gizzard of a chicken. Harry Reid, the Senate Minority Leader.
You know what we ought to do?
What?
I think here's what we ought to do. We ought to all email and contact Howard Dean and ask them if on the website we can please have an explanation from each one of these senators that voted for that.
Yeah, and we can email them, too. I mean,
yeah, we can.
You know, Salazar, Democrat, Colorado. That's no surprise because he's the guy who introduced Alberto Torquemada to the Senate at the confirmation hearings. I knew he was no good.
That's disappointing.
But you know what? You can analyze this a little bit more, Wayne. In a way, it's slimy and scummy, but you can make sense out of Biden. And, where's the other? Both the Democrat senators from Delaware voted in favor of this bill. And, of course.
Well, that's where their refuge is, right? The insurance company.
Yeah, I mean, Delaware is owned part and parcel by the credit card industry. But you know what's tough? States like Alabama, who have two good-for-nothing Republican senators, one of them's a Benedict Arnold. He used to be a Democrat. That's Richard Shelby. The other one's Jeff Sessions. He hadn't got enough sense to pour spit out of a boot with directions on the heel. That's a state full of poor people.
Yeah.
You know, explain that, except for the fact that they're good-for-nothing Republicans. Explain how a Democrat like Pryor from Arkansas or a Democrat like Lincoln from Arkansas.
Well, that's what I tried to tell you earlier, man. Somewhere or another, they're slipping the Kool-Aid into these guys.
I don't think it's Kool-Aid so much as money.
Yeah, well, you could call it whatever you want.
Yeah, well. But I think we have a right to demand answers of these people.
Yeah, we do, and you know, like if your aunt, well, I don't.
Yeah, I tell.
I mean, you know, Senator Burr could come up with, you know, look, I had a senior moment, you know,
mm-hmm.
the respect I have for him, I'd probably buy that.
Yeah, I mean, I have
I
tremendous.
Pushed the wrong button. I didn't.
He broke. That just breaks my heart.
Me too. I don't know.
Well, I tell you what, I think we do have the right to call them on the carpet. And we have a, you know, the same thing's going on in Charleston. We have a right to call these senators and tell them that this third-party bad faith bill has got to die.
Exactly. Well, and that's another thing. And, you know, like, that's what I'm saying, how the people that seem to would have to use these things the most are the people that upset me that support it.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I can understand rich people. What are they? You know, they got enough money. They'll never. But the third party bad faith. Just about anybody could need that, you know.
Yeah.
Within the next few hours.
Everybody that's going to have to deal with an insurance company needs that.
Right. I mean, no, you know, the majority of people don't want excess. They don't. They're not looking to win. Whose has that? Bush Life's lottery or
yeah,
what? You know,
yeah.
They want to be treated fairly and compensated fairly, and that's, you know, and if the insurance company isn't willing to do that, they should be sued. You know, it's just that simple.
Why is it so hard?
Yeah, and why is it that they don't want to be held responsible for anything, but they want to hold us responsible?
Oh yeah, if we're 5 seconds late with the premium payment, man, we are canceled, and whoever picks us up
right.
the next
and
time, we're going to pay twice
what,
for
it. Yeah, if you're late for your electric bill, your insurance payment goes up.
Your credit card interest rate goes through the roof.
Right.
Oh yeah, we got to get out of here, Wayne. Thanks so much, man.
Okay, buddy.
Appreciate it. All right, thanks everybody. Thanks to first of all, the Scarlet Pimpernel, the freeway blogger, and thanks to Jim and Jeff and Ed. Thanks to Frank, our first time caller. Thanks to Matt, Gary, Wayne. You all make it a great show. And, of course, thanks also to John Kepi, the producer tonight, inimitable in any way you care to define the word. The show was engineered by Randy Kerbway and announced at least in part by Brian Resner, brought to you as ever by the 20,000 workers of the Affiliated Construction Trades Foundation. If you're working in West Virginia, indeed they are working for you, also brought to you by our very good friends at the West Virginia Pipe Trades. Don't forget, you can go and hear the archives of the show at whiterosesociety.org.